October 2009.
I don't think we need to go around the room. I think everyone knows each other. But
who's on the phone?
Who's on the phone?
Well, Evelyn's on the phone.
Hello.
I'd like it if you went around the room so I could know the voices, please.
We will do that for you, Bill. Is anyone else on the phone along with Bill? Okay. For Bill's benefit.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA Fisheries.
David Wells, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Eric Walton, DPA.
Jason Sweet, DPA.
Ann Stevenson,
WDFW. Dave Bennett, Fast Center. Thank you.
John Bailey, Corps of Engineers.
Greg Moody.
Hold on. John Bailey, Corps of Engineers.
Bernard Klatt, Corps.
Bill's on.
Tammy Mackey, Corps.
You have the number?
Tim Dykstra, Corps.
830-6260, yeah. Try Bill's on it right now, so he should be able to get on.
Does he have the code?
Oh, do you have the code? Okay.
And oh. Apparently, Rick will be joining us on the phone.
Mm. Oh, give it a try.
It works.
It works. Thank you, Bill. All right. Well,
does anyone need an agenda?
Yes, thank you, Tammy. Does anyone need an agenda? I think this is an agenda that, after we said you could print it, you actually could print it for the most part. So, that's good. Does anyone need one?
No.
All right. Any issues, anything to add to the agenda before we start marching through it?
One add-on. John Day Dive, Southfish Turbine for 19.
Okay.
No, 19.
All right.
No add-ons? No add-ons. Dell's fish units. I don't believe so. You got an update on that?
Yeah, just basically the air. It's already out there. It's a brief report.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. We'll add that on. All right. Rick, are you on the phone now?
Yes, I did succeed in getting in.
Great. Congratulations and welcome. So, I'm sure everyone has been poring over their meeting minutes from September 10. Any comments before we approve meeting minutes? All right. Approved.
I find them, so I tried this morning.
Yeah, well.
You can send them out, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
A couple times.
Okay. Well,
a couple times.
We will consider those approved and move right into action items. 2.1 Bonneville Spillway Repairs.
Granny's not here. This will have to be carried over.
Okay. Carry that over. Okay. 2.2 Lib Goose Spillway Weir. I did talk to Marvin in planning. This is going to be a tough issue for us to really address this year, mainly because there was preliminary data sent out. Some of you might have probably already seen it, which is preliminary data from the summer 2009 at Little Goose, evaluating passage, and the entire test was done, let's see, between June 6 and July 5. And so there was quite a bit of water then. We were in low crest position the entire time with the Little Goose Spillway weir. And so this is the most relevant data that we have. Well, Marvin's going to check to see what other information we have, but this is the most relevant study is Little Goose passage. And it's not going to really tell us anything about low-flow subyearling passage. All it tells us is when we have a lot of water pouring over a low-crest TSW, we are going to have a lot of fish that use it, surprisingly. And so, unfortunately, this study doesn't give us any information But Marvin's digging, and we can keep it on the agenda so I can update it if we get new information. But anything else on that?
Yeah, what was the context of this, Jim?
I believe the context of this was the end of summer discussion that we had about the TSW, or the spillway weir at Little Goose, and when to shut the TSW off. And there are, we had in the fish passage plan, it says, I don't remember the exact flow targets, but it says we'll take it out of service when we get down to, and I can't remember the flow right now. And then that didn't happen this year because it apparently folks at TMT didn't like what was in the fish passage plan. And so we had a little bit of a problem this fall, or this end of summer, when the fish passage plan says we were going to take it out. We hit those low flow targets to take it out. But then when it was coordinated through TMT, apparently the word from TMT was, no, let's not take it out.
Why, kind of process question, why did it have to be coordinated through TMT if it was already a fish passage plan?
That's a good question, and it was in the FOP, 2009 summer FOP, and it said, somewhat inexplicably to me, but the line in there did say that this change will occur after coordination with TMT. And so, I guess one way, to lay it on the table, if we're not under a court order next year, then, and if there's, that means then there'd be no FOP. And if there's no FOP, then we have the fish passes plan. When we have the fish passes plan like we did this year, we would just do what we said we were going to do in the fish passes plan.
Or coordinate other ways.
Right. And so here, under potential FPP change forms, one that isn't drafted yet but will be for November is basically just pulling some of those footnotes out of the spill tables and pulling them into the actual FPP document. That was some of the confusion, was we had the triggers for when the TSW was going to come out of service based on low flow events. But it was just, the only way to see those triggers was to look at the footnote. And it's kind of fine print. And so the point is we will have a fish passage plan change form for November where we'll pull those footnotes up into the text so that it's
14 font.
So that's transparent.
16.
In red.
So
if you have a FOP next year, that we don't include it in their coordination with TMT. Almost everything else in the fish pass plan is not coordinated with TMT. It's already coordinated against that document.
Right. So you get too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was quite a bit of ambiguity.
I didn't hear Scott's comment on this.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
His point was, if we state something in the FPP, let's try to not contradict that in the FOP, which is a very good point. You catch that, Bill?
Yeah, I caught it. Yeah, that's a real important point, Scott.
Yep. Okay.
You get a finger for that.
Yeah, well. Give him the finger. Give him the finger.
That's the guy I was thinking hat on this morning.
That's right. He's wearing it. Okay. I think that wraps it up for 2.2. 2.3, the Dow Session Trash Sluiceway Operation.
Completed.
Yeah, Gary did send out the memo, and Tammy sent it out to FPOM. We'll talk about it in one of these, number 8. So let's move on.
Okay. 2.4, we've already talked about the spillway weir. 2.5, Bonneville AFF minutes. It's completed and attached to the agenda.
Correct. And the next step would be for me as a task to set up a meeting with the TAC, the Harvest TAC, and get all the right players in the room soon.
Any thoughts on when that's going to occur?
I was thinking November.
At least, yeah.
Tom, what do you think about meeting? What's a good time for the TAC to meet with us?
They're going to fall.
and so now just crunching numbers.
Okay.
Just get on their agenda.
And who would be a good point to contact?
I think Cindy is really bad right now.
Okay, Cindy.
She's a little bit upset. Can't get hold of her call.
I thought.
Okay, well, I'll start with Cindy.
Stewart. Stewart's in charge right now. That's a change last week. Unless that changed in the last 2 weeks.
All right, well, I'll get a hold of both of them and find out what's up.
Okay. 2.6, we had committed, Walla Walla committed to having a winter maintenance schedule, and you have that in the agenda. I guess we'll cover that when we get to updates, section 3.9, but it's in here. And 2.7, Bonneville roof.
Yeah, that's Mark Saka. We were talking about the possibility of changing the structural design using the columns on the existing foundation. He's still working on the details on that, so there is no real update right now. He's also looking at the level of excavation that will be required for that. So once he gets something, we will bring it to FPOM, hopefully next meeting.
They're kind of a tight deadline on
that? Yeah, it is.
So FBP fish viewing booth, or
sounds good to me. Fish viewing building.
Building, okay.
Booth's close enough though.
Okay. Done with action items. Moving into updates. 3.1, Bonneville Fish Unit Trash Rack.
The trash rack clips have been fabricated and are getting installed right now. So hopefully we can schedule a test soon. That's the update. As soon as we get that thing together, we'll just put out a call to everybody when we can all go out there and see it. Hopefully it'll be before December 15th when the tie crane comes back. But that's a whole other subject.
That's another subject, yeah.
Is there
let's
nothing
see,
on
Friday?
Yeah.
October.
I kind of dropped that in as a little precursor.
Leader.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Watch your calendar on October 10th.
So, I'm thinking the last week of October, hopefully.
I was hoping that my calendar doesn't go up.
Would you like to
see the
first
Friday? Is that possible?
The 23rd?
Yeah.
Just this one could be up there on inspection.
Here. Here's a file. It's on there.
16th.
The 16th?
Is that possible?
We can try it for the 16th.
Just going to be out there.
Somebody's birthday's on the 16th. Who could that be?
It would be appropriate, technically.
We've got the McNary Cup. Frankie's in that day.
No.
That's in the morning.
I don't intend to be there because I've already scheduled to be out of Bonneville.
See if we can schedule that for the 16th.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're not around the 23rd?
The 23rd is. No.
It's following Friday, then the
30th. No, I'll be off.
Okay, so let's tentatively shoot for the 16th with a test. So mark that down as a tentative right now. So if you're starting to fill your calendar, I really think you guys, if you are in the area, should go check it out.
What are we checking out?
The B2 trash rake modification. It's that trash rake that's sitting over on the shoreline there for the past 5-6 years. So
I mean, if for Friday's a problem, because it might be, then for the
riggers.
Project, yeah, the riggers. I don't think that's going to work.
Who knows?
Right, Tammy?
Tom, had you seen the McNary Cop meeting? Was it officially rescheduled for the 16th in your book?
I have not seen the email yet.
I haven't either. I just heard a few things.
That's the date we kind of set up for both.
I was going to call Tim and tell him I'm just not
there.
Available.
I know with 60 alternatives, they're trying to do their darnest to pair those back. I've not heard how that has gone.
Well, I'm going to ask him to get it done on the 15th, one day. Let's just get that. No, it got moved. SCT is the next Thursday. It was, but it got moved to the next, right, Bill? SCT?
Yes, it got moved.
Yeah.
October 22nd?
Yes, in the afternoon, 1:30.
Yeah. So.
Where at? Just to make sure I need to get a room.
Grid pick.
Or at your office.
I'll make sure I got a room.
Because the avian predation thing is at Critfic in the morning there.
That's right. So we're trying to do that at the 16th.
So avian predation and SCT at 1:30 to 4 on the 22nd. And then if we need more SCT time, it's at 9 to 11 on Friday the 23rd. Right.
We're trying to do it on the 16th.
Friday the 23rd.
Someone else join us on the phone?
Yeah, Steve Richards, Dolphin Count, WDFW.
Thanks, Steve.
Hi.
After that.
All right.
Okay. Are we good on that?
Sounds like it.
For now.
For now, tentatively. Okay. Bonneville. Bay 15 hoist, confirming repairs will be completed by March
10, 2010. Just an FYI, John is out with the swine flu.
Oh, no.
Confirmed.
Confirmed.
Steer clear of John. Wow. Or Bonneville Fish Field, or Fishery Office, not Field Office.
His cubicle has been quarantined.
Has it
been?
It's been...
like yellow tape,
quarantined, wrapped, and being contaminated.
The whole thing.
Yeah, it's
but he did do his Bay 15 hoist work, and Tammy, you know more about it?
So it looks like the project is going to pay for the 16-week expedited repairs on the Bay 15 hoist, and if the contract is awarded by the 1st of December, which is the earliest it can happen, that puts the contractor done about the 1st of April. The project needs 3 to 4 days to get the hoist back where they belong, so it could be ready for spill season.
Yeah.
Yeah, can they be installed with the dock off? Maybe docked open while they're working
on it? I don't know about that. Probably not. They haven't done anything else with it dogged.
I was just saying, if it gets into spill season, they may still be able to put the parts in it.
Oh yeah, they might.
But if we had I guess we don't want to pay a cliff, do we?
No.
They just need questions like how long if we had to put it. So 2 years probably, but it's gonna be like 3 weeks that might be used.
It's pretty quick last time we changed the parts last.
And they do remember where they took all the hoists from, so it should be pretty quick putting them all back.
Before you leave Bonneville, can you give us an update on Unit 11? Somewhere along the way?
Sure. Yeah, Dennis. Get Schwartzy to call in. Schwartzy's supposed to be calling in.
Well, we'll...
Or after you leave
Bonneville. We will get it.
Sometime today.
We will get that update.
And let's keep that on the calendar as an update until we get it.
Okay. Bonneville.
MU 11?
Unit 11.
Okay.
All right, so I'll go right into the tie crane and give you the latest.
Oh, here we go. Lower the boom on us.
So, you'll be giving me the finger in a minute, I'm sure.
How about several?
Several fingers? Ow. No, it's so the paint job, you know, it was really in bad condition when it was delivered, and apparently the first primer coat was good, and then the sealer on top was bad. They didn't wait long enough, and the chemical reaction didn't allow it to cure. So, we brought in a paint expert from wherever.
They're hard to find.
They're very hard to find and very expensive. And he came down and did it. Yup, that's paint. That's bad paint.
That's a bad paint job.
That's a bad paint job. So,
read his directions on the can. Yeah. Okay.
So do it again. So the contractor has said, well, okay, we're going to take the boom. It's back at the Oregon sandblast and paint. I don't know exactly what they're going to do, but they've requested that they whatever they're going to do, they're going to deliver now the crane boom to Bonneville by and have it operational by the 15th of December. So that means, yes, they're probably going to sandblast and paint it as we've requested. And I'm sure they're getting their paint experts together and they're going to meet with our paint experts.
It's
and
not
say, yeah, well, it said right on the instructions of the paint that
let
it had
dry
to
first.
Well, they followed the spec for a 1 millimeter and or a 4 millimeter application, and the spec on the paint can, but the spec in the contract was 6, so that's what happened.
Oh,
so who had April 10th for the
yeah, so that's the latest, and I can't. You know, I can just keep updating you.
And they don't sue the Corps for some kind of breach of contract.
Oh, well, no, that's coming. That's coming down the road. You already know that. Well, we're shooting for March. First week of March.
To install.
Yeah.
Usual.
So that's in the work schedule at Bonneville.
Well, I don't know, but we can make sure it is. I mean, we've been talking about this for 3 years.
Has it
been 3 years now?
Yeah.
But I know that they're laying out their schedule and it's probably getting to that
point. It's
like
traffic.
God, you do have your thinking hat on today. Jeez.
What about, there's also, you guys said there's a dent in that.
That was another thing. It was dented when it was moved, so they're going to, you know, whatever they do to fix it, but they're going to fix it.
Heat gun on it.
Apparently, they have a technique that they can do that. It's basically welding it up. It's just a little, like a dimple.
A dimple.
So they can I guess, spot weld it and then sand it. And then
create a...
Yeah,
hot spot there.
Create a weak spot.
Oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
No, we hired a welding expert for that one.
Yeah, that's right. Our welding expert has signed off on that technique. So, 15th of December, a little Christmas present F-POM coming up.
No, 25th will be.
We'll see.
So, I'll just keep updating you guys. You know, it's kind of ridiculous to me, but Jim Mahar, who is now our acting chief of ops, is very, very concerned and very vocal now that he's at this level.
Jim's
about this.
Now the acting chief.
Yeah.
Who's Bonneville's?
Jerry Carroll.
He's the new.
Yeah. And it's a, it'll be a 3-year if Jim gets it permanently, more likely he will. So.
Project. Carol's the project manager at Bonneville.
OPM, yeah, the OPM.
Okay.
What is this?
We're going to move on to update 3.4 Bonneville velocity measurements, update on why the data are needed now.
Schlinker never returned my message, but they're going to be doing it on the same day as the survey, so... I still need to get the why is the data needed now question answered from, was it Dr. Bubble? So.
I have no idea.
Let's keep going. Keep going.
Hello, this is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, how are you doing? Good, how are you?
Let's go ahead and find out.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
Well, so far,
thinking no.
We have two sites that are not on.
Hey, we'll just keep moving along. Can I unplug this in again?
With hope.
Yeah, it'll be coming in on a boat from Honolulu.
I can unplug it.
That'd be funny.
I'm not going to ask what Noah's smiling at.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of odd. You guys better not be disclosing any real...
What?
Disneyland?
Oh, you like that? It's not fancy. We have matching rings. Okay. And I do.
We will keep moving along. Update 3.5 Bonneville jumping fish vertical slot pit tag detectors.
Jumping
well,
fish?
Well, no, we had the avian array on there first, don't we?
Not on mine. Oh.
Jumping fish 3.5.
Jumping fish.
Okay, jumping fish.
Right here. 3.5.
Oh, it's above it.
At the vertical slot pit
tag. So, because of the high forebay, we're guessing the fish are jumping when you get to the vertical slot section of the fishways, and they are landing on the pit tag walkways. Mm. You know, that you go out to the detectors. So we've had 3 or 4 over at Washington Shore and a couple over at Bradford Island. We just wanted to give people a heads up on that. I think he'll...
3 or 4 are dead?
Dead. Dead. Very dead. We had to go over there and check them over with a stick. That's probably where John got the swine flu, come to think of it, because that's what we were doing Thursday. And we are having the garage crew put up... yeah. He was touching them. I was throwing them at him.
This is something new.
We haven't seen this before.
No,
so
no.
The garage crew is supposed to be putting up barriers on the downstream side of those walkways. They were not installed yesterday, but hopefully today they will be.
Pads or nets or combination?
Well, I thought nets, but I think they're going to put up plywood, just make it a solid wall, so the fish won't even see water on the other side, and they'll just go underneath, hopefully. Some of them were pretty well dead, but it's a combination. There's some on it. Some of them, yeah. They've been there a while. And the only reason we knew about it was because the pit tag guys were down there saying, hey, you got some dead fish here. Maybe you want to come get them.
Where are they? What's the plywood? Do we have any drawings or anything?
Basically, it's a walkway with handrails that the NOAA guys, the PASCO guys, go down and service the pit tag detectors.
Okay.
In the upper section where it's all bright yellow.
This is which one? Which letter again? This is
Washington Shore and Bradford Island.
Both of them. So they're doing this at both?
Yes.
Okay.
So on the downstream side of those handrails, we'll put up a solid barrier so fish can't jump through
that
the openings.
That's going to work?
We're guessing that's where they're jumping. Nobody's actually seen them
some
jump.
Splashes and stuff, though. I mean, you may not see them jump, but you should see water splashes on there if it's early, right? Get a John Day. You get a good idea where fish are jumping just by the splash marks. I pulled the audio plug on the speaker,
that's
so
probably about what I.
Yeah, that's it's. Don't worry about it. You need to.
Probably in the last
year for this year.
Week and a half or so is when people reported them.
I just yanked it. We'll plug it in when we can.
3.5.
Okay.
Jumping fish at bottom.
Okay. Jumping fish. We've got fish jumping at the vertical pit tag detector. Vertical slot. Yeah, both Bradford Island and Washington Shore ladders. And they're going to put plywood up where they think they're jumping. Now, where are they jumping?
We think they're jumping through the handrails and landing on the grate and
they're
not able to
get
off. They're
on the fiberglass grating, and they're getting trapped there because that's kind of a ledge. Is there a corner? Are they jumping up in the corners? Or?
They're just on the grate, the walkway. I don't know if they're jumping anywhere else. We just seen this evidence.
Anybody should be going out and taking a look at this on their inspections closely to see if there are splashes, because that'll tell you where they're jumping. Steelhead?
And others.
Apparently everything and very good.
No shad. We haven't seen any shad.
Really?
They're not jumping.
So, in the mix of species, you couldn't tell because they were that dead.
Yeah, some of them were just the skin left on them.
Constant daily inspections out there, huh?
So I couldn't get. They're jumping at the vertical slot.
Yes.
Yeah, well, we have the four-band bundles now, like 7778, which is
78.
Yeah, 2 or 3 feet more than we normally have. So I'm sure the velocity of slots is. Velocity of slots is probably a little more.
But we,
it's pretty high.
Too. Not unusual. I mean, we've
so
had
it's a higher differential than the vertical slot. Then.
No, it shouldn't be.
Higher head coming through the slot,
or higher head, because that's supposed to be supposedly evens out. It evens it out, but incrementally up through the whole thing, there's a slightly higher.
Any chance we just video it and
it's all even at the downstream end. It's the same, but the four goes up and down.
There's four walkways.
Well, so you get the stairs just out of the chain.
Eight walkways all
vertical slide.
Well, your typically we would have problems. Chance of seeing it
is in the
great,
corners.
But we could do that.
Right.
Where that.
Like the
makes
serpentine
wheel. Makes a turn and boils up on the
boils
corner.
Up on the corner.
I mean, that's what we see at John Day and things like that. That's where we get a miscue to jump.
Well, don't forget, we are talking, what, seven adults, and we had what kind of passage numbers we had? Pretty high passage numbers. So this is not exactly...
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, except that
yeah, it's a stupid
there aren't many places where you lose fish. We shouldn't be killing fish.
You know, I have to agree with Tom sometimes.
It may have occurred in the past. We've just not seen it because we didn't have the walkway out there. Although that pit tank has been out there for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Many years.
But I mean, that.
You know, they're pretty good at reporting when they have dead fish. They don't like the smell.
Well, we
just not quick about it, are they?
Yeah.
Not until they smell.
So what do you think we should do?
What would you like us to do?
Well,
can we get the fish field unit out there to observe it?
Stancil, what do you think?
Well, we're going to have to get cameras on body shortly this fall.
Wouldn't it just be cheaper to put up a fence? Like at Little Goose, there we had an issue that wasn't even clear to us until I think it was Annie from Oregon said, "Well, this is something that they've seen like one or two or three fish every year for a couple of years." Once we knew that, we put up a net fence in that stretch.
We did that there at Goose. There's one. Monumental.
Is this the crooked finger?
Swinty
container. Like, it would probably be just as cheap to construct the net as it would be to put up cameras to, and then read the tape to see where they're jumping.
I'd like to. Somebody needs to look at the hydraulics here and see what's going on. We have a ladder where we never see fish jumping, and now we do. We've crossed the barrier, a threshold of some sort, and that would be interesting to understand better. Because we have fish jumping at other ladders, John Day especially, because of what we've done there initially. But here we've got a situation where we've never seen this. I haven't anyway. And now we do. So something has changed that I'd like to understand a little better. This would help us down the road in understanding problems that we have either here or at other dams. But it would be interesting to do more than just throw up some plywood, but maybe to give the hydraulic idea of how the hydraulics have actually changed in that ladder. And then as far as putting the plywood up, that's about all you can do. All I'm concerned about is that we put it in the right spot, and then if there's sharp edges and things these fish are banging against, dead bodies aren't going to show that, but the fish will still get injured. So. Let's make sure there's nothing that these fish are jumping against. And you guys are out there three times a day or thereabouts on inspections, I hope. Maybe it should be four or five or six, maybe. And look for splashes because those take a while to dry up.
Gary, at John Day, fish continue jumping in the North Ladder. And practical advice would be don't assume if you have a handrail and fencing that they cannot get out, because even if they can squeeze through the smallest.
I know. I've seen them go through a slight rip in the net.
Below the fencing sometimes, there's maybe 5-6 inches.
Yeah, I know.
We've seen fish getting through that.
They will.
Almost seems impossible, but they do.
Yeah, I know. You can't have gaps. And the other thing, too, is sharp edges and things that are sticking out. Those walkways are full of sharp edges, but I'm worried too much because they the fish jumping out. But if fish are not jumping, then we've got to look at that too. Let's look at a lot of fish going through Bonneville Dam. I mean, we had 5,000 coho yesterday or thereabouts, so 7,000-8,000 fish a day going through the dam. That's a lot of fish.
Is it in all years? All, what is there, six?
There's four at each ladder.
Four.
And we didn't see, There were two on the uppermost one, and I think one in the middle at Washington Shore.
So it could be any of them.
Could be any of the four.
So there's eight total.
Eight at the...
But I'd be really interested in exactly where they're jumping, so, you know, the hydraulic evaluation. Or somebody, I mean, I don't know.
Yes, the Hillcrest model with... No, that's collection channel. Okay.
Somebody had to look at the hydraulics there. Because I think that'd be very informative. And then also some observations of, we got dry weather for the next week or more, so we got to be able to see jumping splashes on there. That's how we, you go to the Dells or John Day, you see the splashes, you know where they're jumping. You can tell by the splashes on the wall.
Okay. Well, we'll get a hold of maybe Schlinker and see if he can do some kind of analysis.
Yeah.
I mean, had the inspection, look for splashes. Stancil said he'd go out there personally and take a peek.
Yeah, we can make a few options.
Just anytime somebody's driving by, take a look and see.
What yeah, I mean, it is going to be,
I know these are the upper end, but
this kind of weather.
Yeah, is the plywood in the right location? You know, are there other things that could injure fish? And then why is this happening? And maybe some insights to use in the future.
Typically it's an upwell. It's an upwell problem. It's a false jump. They typically don't jump. They typically don't miscue at the slots. The slots are a swim-through operation. The miscues are in the corners.
Mm-hmm. That's what we saw at John Day.
And I don't understand how we changed the hydraulics.
John Day, I mean.
Was there any tailwater.
Well, another thing at John Day is
2 feet higher.
Change the...
Yeah, I think you're...
The water is also coming over the slots, and at some point, some of the splashing is coming over. We thought maybe that could confuse them.
So it's overtopping the top of the ladder?
Not consistently, but sometimes.
That's because that would do it.
Yeah.
That would do it. I mean, if it's overtopping
part of the ladder, that would definitely do it.
You know, well, that's part of the problem we're having as well.
You're having a problem with overtopping?
With this forebay.
Yes, it's a problem if you have dead fish, but yeah, with this forebay, it's not a consistent overtopping, but at times there will be water coming over the top of some of those slots.
Forget the hydraulic.
That would be my guess. You get bump up in the forebay, get overtopping, and you're getting fish leaping at that cascade. So especially when you've got
a
ladder full of
side.
Fish.
Increase the walls of the. I mean, that's what you
or
have to do.
Or decrease your forebay.
Or decrease the forebay.
Can't do that.
Well, is it half a foot? I mean, where are we at, and how often does it overtop? We can't have dead fish in the ladder, so this has got you got to stop.
Well, it just sounds like a good
job. Oh, a tall.
All right. Wow, before this spirals out of control.
So we will.
And now for the egg. Hey, I got a bag of tomatoes up in the lunchroom.
All right.
Let me get a camera. I just got to get a camera.
We're going to show you that.
Okay. Can we move on?
Yes, please.
Okay. Moving on, 3.6 Bonneville.
B2 Corner Collector Avian Array. USDA got in there the last week of September and replaced, not all of them, but the ones that were in the water, they retrieved what they could and cut it off, but still had to buoy them, and the Rangers were going to go and finish that once the tailwater came up. They couldn't get up to the top.
So there were six of them broken.
Yeah, they've replaced four of them, I believe.
Replaced which four?
One of them that was broken, that was in the water, was never installed because it was way further up on the corner collector, so it wasn't even down on the outflow. The other, there was another one that was broken that ran over the top of the corner collector.
One was never installed, but it was hanging on the river?
Yes.
How was it never installed?
It was never installed
never
to the post.
The other end.
So it was just left hanging.
Yes, it was just left hanging in the river.
That was one of that buoy just going...
Okay.
The other one that was not installed was one that ran right over the concrete wall, and it was just going to rub and break again pretty much right away, so they didn't bother with that. But the other four they did install, and those ones are up and running just fine. Should be noted that Rarisich got this done, even though these wires have been down for 2 years. So,
so the ones that were hanging are.
Let's hope he's going to be here, so we can give him a pat on the back. You know,
give him a finger.
Give him a finger.
Nothing's hanging in the river then now.
They USDA cut them off as far as they can, but when tailwater comes back up, the rangers will get out there and cut those.
That's yeah, right.
Okay. That's how we'll do it.
So.
Consider replacing this other material we found for Jonathan.
No. We did not.
It's probably a fisherman issue.
We've got to see how that synthetic works.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a minor miracle getting them replaced this far, so we're not going to push it.
So what kind of wire was that?
Whatever.
It's just a, I don't know, it's cable.
Standard 3/8?
I think so. It's 3/8 stainless cable, yeah.
Yes.
Now a chain, there's chain link.
Unit 11 up there, yeah.
10, can you hold this 24 on this next one, John?
No problem, we'll just move on.
I don't have an answer. I told Schwartz to call in.
Okay.
Okay. Schwartz, did you call in?
Did someone else join us on the phone?
Is there anybody on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
People on the phone.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
Okay, we're moving on to update 3.7, John Day Avian Array.
Oh.
Sean Tackley is not, couldn't be here today, so he asked me to quickly give you a summary. A meeting to discuss and coordinate the next year, 2010 John Day goal, predation abatement and research activities was held on September 21st. And what basically what we covered, three areas. Continue with avian predation study by Fisher's Field Unit. They have done a good job this year, but there are lots of more work left and questions remaining. Then enhanced the boat avian hazing program. So far, we have only conducted shore-based hazing, which was not very effective due to them to a long distance where the birds are feeding. And then finally, include lethal management in predation control toolbox. Not the silver bullet by itself, but as the last resort type of action. So the meeting, I think, was successful, was attended by most of you, and I think everybody has an idea, right, that for the next year, the avian array itself, I think it's covered by Federweek, so I'm not sure how much you want to talk about that one. It's still under development 90% right now, and appears to be that you're going to get finally an effective array with full coverage of the entire BRZ. Further downstream than what we used to have this year, which would be really a big change.
Four poles, right?
Yeah, I don't even know the details, but I think there are some additional.
It's all the 90% report. I haven't had a chance.
There is one downstream on the Oregon side to increase the coverage, Nevlock. And there are two on the Nevlock side. And
nothing in the river.
But that's under development, and it's going to be presented to you at Federweek.
So the big question is, what color are the lines going to be?
Is it what?
What color are the lines going to be?
Oh, I don't know. It's your choice.
I thought we were going counter shaded.
Camo?
I think the standard is gray, but they
blue
can,
underneath.
They can color almost with anything.
Except by
so then the second important part of this three-tier approach to bird abatement at John Day is the boat hazing, and that's going to be I think quite successful if you can get the hazers close
in the BRZ.
And the third would be lethal again, hopefully from a boat. And
hopefully what
from a boat.
We do have permit now, which we can work under from USDA. USDA has a permit from Fish and Wildlife Service, and Fish and Wildlife Service is okay with us using this overall
working under
the entire Columbia River Basin, same permit.
So USDA will be doing the hazing. We're going to bring on more crews. That'll be partially funded.
And they have the okay for lethal take as well.
Yes, yeah. They do.
Wow.
years ago when we wrestled with this, I thought the core had to
This is temporary.
Yeah,
this is
research.
Is for this year. The lethal take part of it. The Corps, well, the USDA is doing this, not the Corps.
Right.
So it's USDA under their existing permit, which does cover the entire Columbia River. All they're doing is allocating take of gulls to the lower Columbia River dams away from some of their other locations, probably from some of the dumps. Maybe not. Probably be more likely come from landfills.
Yeah.
There's they have a very large number of gulls they can take from landfills, and they can adjust some of that. So
USDA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife have an EIS or an EA in place.
Yes, already for this permit, right?
So this is only for Lower Columbia, though.
Yes.
Permit.
Yes.
But this is
Permit's not. Permit's for the Columbia Basin, but the extension, if you will, of take is for this purpose for Lower Columbia River dams, as far as I understand.
Right. They can use the take anywhere in the Columbia Basin. Typically, in the past, they've been more upstream and in dumps and things like that. So they're reallocating. They're not increasing the total take on their permit.
Right. Uh-huh.
They're just reallocating where the take may come from.
Yeah. In this case, it'll be reallocated to Lower Columbia. It says it's 1,800 birds, 1,500 to 1,800 gulls per season for the entire Columbia Basin.
Right. So we'll see how it works. Yeah, this is sort of
So this is a temporary thing.
Look to see what happens. Yeah, let's see how it works. Like I say, it's sort of a last resort. We think that the boat hazing will probably have a lot of effect, a good effect there, as well as the new avian array.
Yeah.
And if necessary, then there could be some lethal as well. And if it needs to be a long-term thing down the road, we'll have to look at a separate permit probably for this, or a separate allocation.
A separate permit.
And I know the service is concerned about it. They want to make sure it's really necessary before that continues.
We haven't had the full array yet.
Yeah, there's lots of pieces to fall in place.
So another question. Did you guys get the research and the lethal permit thing worked out?
Yeah, it's all in the U.S.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're going to collect your fish, your gulls for you and all that stuff?
Correct.
Okay.
If you will continue with emphasis on consumption, which is the stomach content analysis, it's very important part of the study. Not just the observations of the bird behavior and feeding patterns or incidents. That's it. Any questions? It's looking good. Like I said, all those three steps are getting seriously beefed up and finally resolved. So we should be able, it's looking like we should be able to get the avian predation under control the next year.
Do you want to also talk to about the LRAD demo out there?
Right.
Yeah.
And then
how'd that go?
The long-range acoustic device demonstration took place on the 23rd of September at John Day, and with an understanding that this was not the best of times.
No birds.
Because of the lack of seagulls, which are the main target. However, we did have some, and in a short summary, this device did elicit pretty strong response from seagulls. In fact, the company, which is American Technology Corporation, and their subcontractor for DTEC company, which is for the biological and sound type of applications, they probably have most experience with gulls. They haven't covered all the species yet, like cormorants, a little bit shaky, and they don't know what they would be responding to. And the sound responses are pretty much species specific, so they're not universal. But with the seagulls, I think what we have noticed when we tested on a few feeding downstream of the GBS, that the distress call actually agitated the gulls and brought some gulls which were not even seen in the area. They actually flew in. They got attracted. And then the hazing sounds actually repelled them. So there was definitely a very strong response for the gulls.
What gulls? What species?
As far as the cormorants, they acted a little bit sluggish. They didn't have that quick of a response. But again, the sound, the targeted sound needs to be developed.
What gulls were there? What species of gulls were at the outfall?
So I think the Californias are pretty much gone by now. Are they all ringbills?
They're all white.
Sorry. Food watcher asking a fish biologist.
This big. Subjects from Shantaki will be attached to the agenda, so you will have an opportunity to review. Well, again, the device appears to be promising. It's not the silver bullet.
Yeah.
It will be fairly used in a combination. We are afraid with some other methods, of course, and supplementing them. One thing which we need to probably be aware of would be habituation, because it may be effective initially, but with frequent use, it may lose its
capability. I'm just thinking, there's usually by December, we have large concentrations of gulls again on the Columbia at the dams feeding on shad, or maybe November, I guess. And that would be a good time to do this when they're actively feeding rather than just kind of lazing around.
John Day Management is interested potentially in using this method to abate cormorants from sitting and push them out, control them from and remove them from sitting on transformers and some other electrical equipment at the powerhouse. In fact, they have been, after this demonstration, they've been pretty seriously almost committed to purchasing a couple. And that would be maybe, that would be perfect, because we could share. They need that equipment in winter, we need it in summer.
Okay.
How much are
they? $33,000 each, without any additional equipment, which is the emitter and the control box. And it can be mounted on a pickup truck for mobility.
Was these G20?
Or it could be fixed for the like transformer application. Most likely, it will be fixed because it has to be pretty high, away from the highway, because the noise can be annoying. It has up to, I think this model we tested was up to 150 decibels, but it does have like a safety range to up to 120. Because you don't want to, you don't want to kind of harm people or somebody who is hit with 150 decibels. The physical response, physiological response, is pretty striking, and it causes, you know, pretty curling up, and so the surprise factor can be quite scary, from what I understand. For human type of applications. The devices have been used to repel pirate attacks on boats, and they could be effective up to almost a mile, I think.
Can't wait to see the signs you have at the entrance.
It can play CDs. It can play different sounds, which could be recorded.
So we can finally get that Pink Floyd light show.
It's a microphone. Light show. You can
send. Is there anybody out there? Hello.
It can send
the wall together at the
mile away. You can hear clearly a low speaking voice a mile away. So,
okay. Well,
let's
before we
wrap.
Come
up,
that's right. And before we think of the next album we play in this, let's move on to. And we do. Last I heard, unless anything's maybe changed from Gary, we have this room, I believe, only until 12:45. In which case, we do have the Columbia room that we could move to. But it'd be really nice to just get this done. Okay. So let's move. John Day, Ice and Trash Sluiceway Test Operation.
We can boot that one to
The Dalles.
We're going to talk about that in a bit.
Okay.
Keep going.
Winter maintenance, you have the Walla Walla list in front of you. Greg is here to answer any questions that you might have. I'm going to assume that there's no questions at this time. You can look it over and let us know if you have any questions.
It looked to me like the McNary, Washington, and Oregon show were out at the same time. Is that correct?
It looks like it's correct.
Why are
they
we want to
do a little bit, well, in another subject later on, I guess they want to do a little bit of work on the organ.
Sure,
but
we should always have one ladder running.
Definitely we should.
So that just caught my quick attention. I don't know what else is I need
to do. I'll double check the
parameter. Okay.
We can update that next F-bomb. Greg, got that? Next F-bomb, update that?
Emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both out at the same date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you only have a month of no ladder operation.
That's a problem. Steelhead, especially fallback steelhead.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, eventually they'll all be downstream.
Okay.
Did you guys already
cover
schedule?
Yeah, we did last month. So we'll get back to you next month on both ladders being out. Any other questions? You can send them to Greg, and we can put them on next month's agenda.
Okay.
Okay. McNary fish pumps. As you recall, last month I told you how the potable water system was having some issues, which caused the fish pumps to trip off. And so I can tell you that the problem is not totally solved yet. Okay. Here's the issue. There's two wells. And each of those wells have a pump, and they pump water up to this, basically a water tank on the hill. And that's the water, that's the potable water that they use, okay? Well, apparently well number two is out. The pump was replaced, but all of a sudden they got back and it wasn't working, and they found out now the electric motor also needs to be replaced. So that's been ordered, and so that's one part of the problem that we're aware of, which is pump's been replaced, now the electric motor will be replaced, and we think that should be replaced sometime like in a month or so.
And how is that related to the fish pump?
It's related to the fish pump because when the pressure in the potable water system drops, it's the same water that's used to cool the fish pumps. Okay. And when the pressure drops, when you get down below 40 PSI, the fish pumps trip.
Okay.
They get shut off.
They're tied into that. So
yes, as a cooling system.
Safety mechanism.
And so the fish pumps are doing what they're supposed to do. When the pressure drops, they're supposed to trip off.
Okay, I see.
So they're doing that. So then the problem is, how can we fix this potable water issue? So there's two parts of the potable water issue. One is we need to fix the electric motor, and we have a plan to get that done. But that's not even going to solve the whole problem, because apparently even when they use the second pump to pressure up. Somehow from the top of the system down to the bottom, they're losing pressure that they can't account for. So not only do we have a pump that's out, we're going to fix that, but there's also a pressure issue going on in the system. They're losing pressure. We have a way that we can sort of temporarily solve it, which is we've got people looking at that on a regular basis, and when the pressure starts to drop and get closer to that 40 PSI, they just turn a pump back on to bring the pressure back up. So we think we can manage this without having fish pumps trip off again, but it doesn't answer the question, why is the pressure dropping? And so apparently McNary's borrowing some pressure flow meters and things from John Day, and they're moving those meters around to try to isolate where the pressure loss is occurring.
It's got to leak somewhere.
And so it's an active process that's been, the project's really been working on, because, you know, from our perspective, we're all concerned about fish pumps. They're also concerned about being able to drink water.
How big a system is this? I mean, the pressure loss could be anywhere in the potable water system.
Yeah. So there,
the faucet of the bathroom.
It's a big problem. Like I said, we think We're solving part of the problem by fixing, we've already fixed the pump, we're going to replace the electric motor, but we can manage this, but it's not really solving the problem until we can figure out where the pressure loss is.
The fish pumps are related to the stools in the restrooms. Stools flush too much.
So don't flush when you go to McNary.
Who would have thought?
Rent hole someplace, huh? Out of sight, out of mind.
Okay.
Brand new toilet, used once, never flushed.
That's right. So anyway, we can keep you updated on it, but that's the project is really concerned about this and is actively trying to solve the problem.
I wonder what else.
So, okay, 3.11. McNary lamprey modifications. I don't really want to launch into this unless we have to. I understand that I wasn't at the last feeder rig meeting, but this the issue of lamprey modifications at McNary and Ice Harbor were discussed at feeder rig.
Yes.
And so if everyone here feels comfortable that your questions have been answered in feeder rig and you understand the plan, we can just get some head nods and keep moving.
I'm not comfortable.
Okay. Do you need more information?
No.
Do you want new information?
No. Unless you guys have some information on how these those 3 by whatever inch slots are going to affect Bell Passage, and do we have a hydraulic evaluation of that? You're cutting slots in a ladder that did not have slots and was not designed for those slots. To what extent do those slots and the water going through those slots change hydraulics in the pools downstream?
But it was my understanding, though, that at the feeder rig meeting, what was rolled out was a plan to monitor passage.
Yeah.
And if we detected a problem, we had some quick response steps we could take to solve whatever.
Sean's throw a brick in. That doesn't make me feel that real warm and fuzzy. Maybe this is a feeder rig discussion rather than an O&M discussion anyway, and that'll be in a few weeks. But I am not comfortable with cutting slots in those and taking that to the other side of the river, too, we're already replicating it or talking about replicating that idea at other dams and other ladders when we haven't even looked at it at Oregon. So I am concerned about it. Cutting slots in there could be a false attraction. It could cause injury. We're not going to see that. You know, that's going to be a very hard thing to see in any kind of monitoring that we have. You know, a fish once in a while going through there, unless we have video monitoring. I don't think we talked about doing that. So
that was part of the. This is Derek Fryer.
Derek, hey.
We're planning on coming up with developing a monitoring plan that would specifically include video.
Okay.
And we're trying, what we'd like to do is if this goes forward, would be to video monitor fish behavior immediately below and above each one of those slots.
Okay.
We're going to cut and then use that information to determine whether it is providing false attraction for salmon. And then how also to gather information on lamprey behavior in the vicinity of those and use that as a guide for whether we want to, whether they seem like they're working well or whether we want to try and block them. And I'm currently working on writing up that evaluation plan. I don't have it done, but I plan on having a draft of that ready to go for discussion at Feeder Rig.
Yeah, I think that's the place for the discussion.
Right.
I just want to let you know I'm not, at this point, I'm still concerned about it until we have a chance to finish that discussion.
Well, I guess if there's, Derek, as you're developing that, if you come up with specific questions, can he contact you, Gary?
Yeah, and Larry Swenson.
Or Larry Swenson. Because the goal would be at Feeder Rig. This is technically more of a Feeder Rig discussion. I'd like to resolve it there.
It is.
But I'd also like to walk into Feeder Rig with a good idea of concerns, having our folks giving them a chance to come up with solutions that we can make this work.
Well, my concerns are the same as they were at the last Feeder Rig meeting, so I know it's been months.
Okay.
And it sounds like Derek's working on it, so we'll just have to. I'd like to see the plans. I'd like to see what you're planning to do. We don't want the video. If we put cameras in there, they need to be placed so that we don't have a reaction to those, too. So,
Derek, when
that'll be part of the design is trying to figure out how we can get cameras in there and see stuff without, you know, messing anything up as far as cables and stuff. So that'll be part of the evaluation plan as well.
And you're also going to bring in the information, too, for Ice Harbor.
You guys,
Derek,
have done this.
The changes are going to go on there, too, aren't you?
Yes, we'll be prepared to discuss both McNary and Ice Harbor. We're not talking about cutting slots at Ice Harbor. We're just talking about some plating over diffuser.
Those are okay. Are you working with Robert Stanzel on this? They've done some video monitoring in ladders in the past at Bonneville.
I'm working. Well, I haven't talked with Robert yet, but I plan to, and I've also working with the University of Idaho, who have done some video underwater video monitoring as well, and trying to come together to develop a scope for this activity.
Okay.
So Derek, I guess as a placeholder, I realize you're under some tight time constraints and Fitterweger is coming up at the end of this month. If you get that plan, that monitoring plan developed and yes. feel comfortable with what you have drafted, you could email that to me and I could email it out to FPalm. So folks here, sure. like Gary, Tom, Dave...
Well, ideally, I'd like to have it out before the Fitterwig so they have a chance to review it.
Yeah. So it'd be nice if we could get that out so that we... I really want to make sure that our Fitterwig discussion is productive and we're under some tight time constraints.
One other thing then, too, for that, and I haven't had a chance to focus on this too much, but are there other alternatives to cutting the slot that would achieve the same purpose that wouldn't involve a slot? Too small for the salmon to go through. So, okay. you know, I mean, that's enlarging the slots that are already there to floor depth, you know, all the way down the floor, or changing the configuration of that is another. I wish Ed was here, but when I ran this by him, that was his response. Well, how come they're not just changing the existing slot all the way to floor depth?
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we can at least have a response as to, yes, we think it's a good idea to expand the current existing slots, or at least explain why that's an option that isn't.
A different approach, I guess, is all I'm saying. Is that
there's no reason we couldn't have a movable slot like we do with adjustable weirs. So.
Yeah, there's different ideas that we need to look at.
There's also the ramps.
Yeah. Yeah, a different way to get away from having this narrow slot okay. in there that salmon can't get through.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's kick this then to Fitterweg, and we'll try to get information to you as soon as we can.
Okay.
While Derek's on the phone, I'd like, if we can, to talk about McNary and Ice Harbor Lamprey, agenda item 13, so that for Derek's sake, we can wrap up the Lamprey discussion. So agenda item 13 is McNary, Ice Harbor Lamprey. If you recall, we generally provide an update as far as the nighttime entrance weir that's being lowered. So, Derek, do you want to jump into that?
Sure. I don't have a lot to add today. We're still looking at adult salmon counts and comparing the control versus the treatment, which is the reduced velocity or reduced head differential at night on block treatments. And we're not seeing any differences in that specific test for adult passage, so it's not appearing as though there's any effect on adult salmon. And the only thing I have to add really today is when we look at the pressure sensor data for the differentials, we're seeing some more variability in those differentials in later in September. And I don't have the final data to send out yet, but we are working on the final report for that. And so we need to investigate why we're not achieving the reduction in velocity that we were earlier in the season. And so we need to do a little bit of investigating as to why we're not seeing, you know, the 3 to 4 tenths change in head differential. But some of that may be related to, let's talk with Martin Ahman, and some of that may be related to the tailwater elevations that we're seeing in September. So I have to get back to you on what we're thinking. We're not seeing, why we're not seeing the differential for some days in September. But other than those few days that we're seeing on the on the pressure loggers, it looks like we've done a pretty good job of achieving those differentials up until mid to end of September.
Derek, those your fish observations are based on window counts, right?
That's correct.
So we have no radio tag data at this time to compare to what we've seen at Bonneville Dam.
That's correct.
And is that limited to daytime? Well, no, it wouldn't be. It'd be day and night, right? You're looking at...
For adult salmon, it'd be day only.
It's day only.
When we're looking at the differences for lamprey passage, We are including the nighttime video counts in those estimates.
And from what date to what date was that data collected?
It would have been, I had that in front of me earlier.
Maybe better off, are those data going to be sent out prior to the Fitter Week meeting, maybe?
Yeah, we can work on a draft report. We've got most of the season already completed, so I don't see a reason why we can't get a draft.
Or just a summary, you know, something. My concern is, one, that window counts may not be the best way to tell. I'm concerned about sockeye, so we need to look at that specifically.
Yeah.
We had like 16% of the sockeye at Granite passed a night based on the data that John Dalen put on the web. We've seen that other dams too. So just want to make sure that we're going into this with our eyes wide open.
Sure. I will add sockeye at night to our objectives to see if through the nighttime video monitoring we can include those fish.
Yeah, if there was anything that changed there. I just want to know. I want to make sure that we look at everything, and maybe we can have this discussion in more detail at Fitterwig. But
okay,
any data that you can send me that I can look at prior to Fitterwig would be appreciated.
Sure, I'll try and get a draft report. Like I said, we have most of the data collected already. So
okay. And thanks,
Derek. You can just send that to me. We can get it out to F-Ball.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's it for 3.11, and we've also checked off agenda item 13. Okay, McNary and Lomo, end of truck transport. We're back to 3.12. Just an update for you, as the FOP states, truck transportation at McNary and at Lomo occurred through the end of September. And so we did what we said we were going to do. The last truck left October 1 with no problems. And so just wanted to let you know, truck transport is now done at McNary and at Lomo. We're still transporting via truck at Little Goose and at Granite. That's why I put Little Goose Granite as 3.14 on the agenda. Basically, just a heads up, our numbers, we do intend to continue trucking through the end of October, like we said we were going to do. Little Goose, we're getting the last 2 weeks, we're almost always single-digit fish numbers. And so the numbers are getting low. Right now we're looking at trying to piggyback the truck to go from Granite to Goose and then down to Bonneville. So just a heads up, if we get consistently one or two fish, we might send out an email saying we're going to discontinue truck transport at Little Goose. Right now we're still moving forward on it.
I don't know yet. One or two fish. That's important.
But we are, that is where we're at, and we are
fish want to go downstream.
Yeah, well, hey, they're going downstream right now. So so there's really no issues to relay there, but we're done at McNary, Lomo, still at Goose and Granite. And we plan to continue unless I send out an email or if anyone has specific concerns. But know that the numbers, especially at Little Goose, we're single digits right now.
Yeah.
Is there an official cutoff?
There's not.
There's not a guidance.
Do we contemplate cutting it off now?
That's part of why I'm presenting it, is just to make you all aware that going back to September 27, the largest number of fish was 8. And we're down, like October 1, we had 1 fish.
Is this a wise use?
You're driving a truck, juvenile fish.
What do you think, Bill?
I wanted just to get that clear. Tim, you're saying you're driving a truck clear down to below Bonneville for one juvenile fish?
That's what I'm saying.
Less than 10, anyway.
Well, actually, 2 days' worth of trucking.
So there might be 3 fish.
And with where we're supposed to be conserving energy and
yeah.
This doesn't make sense.
It's a hybrid truck.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
Hybrid diesel.
Is it a hybrid truck?
It's electric.
Yeah, even if it is.
Electric
truck. I order one.
I agree, Bill.
So I agree with that, and that's partly why we just in the last couple days said this is getting ridiculous. So we have the truck going from Granite to Goose down to Bonneville.
Yeah.
And so that means now when a truck goes, it'll have fish collected from both projects on the same truck. At Granite, for instance, the end of September, we were somewhere between 200 and 100 fish a day.
Okay.
Now, early October, the first 3 days of October at Granite, we were at October 1, we were at 28 fish, October 2, 52 fish, October 3, 122 fish. So, the numbers are low, but at least we're at triple digits there. So, it seems like a little bit more logical than what we were doing at Little Goose. So, I think for now, what we intend to continue doing is piggybacking that truck so that one truck is collecting fish from both facilities and driving down to Bonneville.
Or does it have to even stop at Little Goose anymore?
We put a proposal on the table to vote on whether just to end it now. I mean, it's getting into ludicrous small numbers, escorting a single fish down the river, kind of crop change.
Is that a net?
Well, that's from Goose.
Why stop at Goose?
It was up to 100 at Granite.
At Granite, we've been, in the last week, we've been between as high as 122 fish and as low as 28 fish at Granite. At Goose, we've been, in the last week, we've been as high as 8 and as low as 1.
I mean, it all assumes you know what this fish are doing at this time of year.
So, shall we discontinue at Little Goose and continue transporting at Granite?
That's what I proposed, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would there be opposition to discontinuing?
Ask Noah. They're the ones about transport.
To me, that's something we can...
Yeah.
We can consider.
I guess it's something that I had to talk to Paul about, but I think this is crazy. I think I know what Richie's opinion would be, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Transport?
Stop.
That's
crazy.
Well, Schmidt, we don't even know what that's.
We don't know what they're doing.
They can be resigning. I mean, they're where they're at. Our opinion is that those fish are probably just
moving around. Can we know what to say? Can we continue transport at this time or not?
How about if we say the recommendation is just cease?
Continue to transport from Lower Granite, as usual, but just not stop at Goose.
Well, that's an easy one, yeah.
I think based on what's written in the FOP, which oftentimes say things will be coordinated through TMT, what I'll do, and Doug, maybe you can help on this, is we can pass on an FPALM recommendation. And do I have this right? Tom, everyone agree that the FPALM recommendation is stop truck transport from both projects?
Since we've never loved truck transport to begin with, yeah.
Bill?
Well, it sounds like you've got enough fish at Granite to continue truck transport.
But the thing is, one adult returning from
one. Eats them in Bonneville.
I don't know, Bill. With 100 fish or so, is that even worth it?
Yeah, I think it is. 100 fish. A truck from Granite? Yeah.
How about in a week? So a week from... How about a week from today, we'll send out an email with updated numbers at Granite in the email and request feedback by like 2 days from then. So today's Tuesday.
Get into the week because the other person you want to talk to is Russ Cooper.
Yeah.
You want to get his...
Yeah. Can we set up a note now? It's going to take a while to actually process. Next meeting is the 21st, so you're going to
just send an email out requesting
it. We're just having
a whole meeting for this.
Yeah, that's fine. We can, but I'm hearing Bill say that he would like, based on numbers now, he would like to continue.
This is really for Paul, too. Okay. I mean, this is really, Bill and I don't have a lot of say over this. I think,
well, I'm going to have a lot of say.
I think that Paul should be the one to have a say over this, Bill.
And too. There's a reason, Gary, we've been transporting from Lower Granite over these years through October.
What's the reason?
And when I, you know, I can understand why to stop it when you're down to one or one fish or 10 fish, but if you're still getting occasionally numbers of 100 fish collected at Granite, those, that might all translate into a real good adult return because you're depositing those below Bonneville. So that might be worth it.
Okay, so this week...
I have a problem, Paul, relating to this, too.
Paul needs to be the one that speaks on this.
Today's Tuesday. I'll say by... I won't... I'll be in Portland still, but I think John will likely be able to send out an email, I would say by Thursday, with updated numbers from both Granite and Goose. If we can also, John, talk to Marvin or someone in Marvin's shop to get some information on SARs regarding truck transport this time of year. So we'll include that in our email. We'll send it out on. We're shooting for Thursday of this week, requesting input. I guess input by is close of business Monday. Work.
That's a holiday.
Looks like close of business Tuesday. Then yeah. We'll request input and aim to have a decision made by then.
Okay.
And we'll send it out via FPALM. Gary, can you? Make sure that Paul folks within your shop get it.
Okay. I'll talk to Richie and Paul.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll send that out Thursday. All right. Keep it moving. 3.13. The only reason I put this on here is I told you that I would provide an update, and I wasn't going to continue sending out email updates when we broke the 6%. Mortality issue at Lomo. Well, now we're not transporting there anymore, but I told you I would provide this. About one out of every 3 days we had mortality over 6%, and we're talking usually it was when, like, for instance, the 24th of September we collected two fish, one mortality, so we had 50%, and that literally is the common theme. So
should have shut down the bypass and gone down.
Start spilling.
So just to let you know, now collection operations are done. We're no longer transporting. We're no longer collecting at Lomo. So this will no longer be an update. But we did have, since our last FPALM, we probably had about, it's like 9 days where we exceeded the 6%. And oftentimes, pretty much every day in there, we had very near single-digit fish, number of fish collected. So, an update, we did exceed 6%, and now that operation has ended anyway. But
so you exceeded it, and you ended the operation to take care of it.
So we are going to see a change form regarding the percentage of notification.
Yes, if we can get, can you get that on the list, Amy?
You can put it in there. There's going to be a lot of argument over, like, the threshold numbers, and that's good. You're going to get yourself on
a threshold mortality number.
Well, threshold numbers, period. I mean, what are you going to say? Like,
five
we're okay with? Okay,
what's,
five.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I mean, you need a minimum number for your sample. That's
like a minimum of 25 before 6%.
What's the minimum number of fish that we want to trigger?
Number in a collection or number of mortality?
The number that you are your end number. The number you're expecting.
Like this.
Whatever it is. And normally that's a lot more than 25. It's usually 100 fish that we use as a cutoff for that kind of thing. Otherwise your statistics are meaningless.
I'm just trying to find a way to have not have this conversation next year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you need to set a cutoff date or a cutoff number. That's your minimum end.
Season.
Can have that discussion, but 25 is, that's not enough.
25 more or 25 to change?
It's too small.
And your end number, that's the number that you're looking at. Population that you're actually looking at, your sample.
Tom, if we put the minimum number at 50?
I'm just saying, it's like, I don't know. I'm saying, we're going to get the argument over what's a good minimum number.
I'm not ready to make a call personally. I'd like to think about it a little bit.
Okay.
We can consider down the road if we get a change for this.
I'd say 50 would be a minimum.
50?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Greg and/or John, can we work on that fish passage plan change form for a placeholder that's put in 50 is the minimum number of collected fish that will If we exceed 6% and we have more than 50 fish collected, then we'll notify. We'll start with that, get that plant change form rolling at least, and queue it up for realizing that that's not likely to be the endpoint.
That would have to be done for each project. Because it's, no, that's actually in the transport part of the appendix, I think. Yeah.
So
I'll take a look at maybe in each section for the.
Okay. No. We'll just take a look at it.
Discussion with Tom. Is Tom still?
Yeah.
Have you seen the stock market? He's still around.
Might be on vacation.
He's not retired.
Yeah. Whenever you know you get a chance to talk to him.
Yeah.
The other two will go real fast.
Okay.
You can skip over the next one because we don't have any. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We are now moving along. We're through the updates. We are also bypassing agenda item 4 because we've already talked about it. We're now on to agenda item 5, Bonneville Powerhouse 1 fish screens.
I just.
Why'd you bring it up?
Because it's not official anywhere in the project. Just wants the official word that we can scrap those screens.
What do you think, Tom?
Even though it makes.
Yeah, I think we probably should.
Maybe put NGRs in it.
So Epcom says the screens can be scrapped.
Cool. Pretty flitters.
See, I used the real old screen with the metal mesh.
Well, let's keep them and redo the ice and trash this way.
Yeah. Huh?
You guys are so funny. Do I need to give you some fingers?
Break out the fingers.
Why did you bring this up?
Because the project needs it official. And it's like, well, what are you going to do with them when the wall's out? They said that it's not official.
They might help.
What?
You need to put
Do I need retaining walls?
A lot of them.
Okay, so moving on to the next one, we have Carolyn here.
Okay, so is this unanimous okay from FFOM?
I've already decided.
I'm seeing all heads nod, all sarcasm aside, we're moving forward.
The parts are valuable.
Is it worth the fight? I don't think so.
Agenda item 6.
For money or what? How are those usually disposed out there?
The motors, all reusable parts will be salvaged by the project, and then the contractor hauls the rest of it away.
They'll probably use them to make a...
they'll probably be used at Powerhouse 2.
For the
goes to the tie crane.
Okay. Moving on. Agenda item 6, Bonneville Amberson section in water work.
Wow.
We all know what that is.
Of course you do.
I think you're the only one who might, Gary. I was like, yeah, I saw this
one of hackers. Yeah, well, I was calling people yesterday, or I had Ed calling people to figure out what this was.
It's the north wall of the old nav lock.
Yeah, we found that out.
Designed by the
Amberson.
What is the Amberson section?
It's the Amberson
team. It's named after the team.
Dutch.
Yeah.
Is that Carolyn?
Yeah, that is.
So, Carolyn, if you wouldn't mind coming up to the table next to a microphone so folks on the phone can hear you.
Okay.
I think Ed vacated the seat here.
Yep. Or yeah, he's coming back a little later. But
okay.
Hopefully we'll be done.
So Tammy was right. This is the north wall of the old nav lock at Bonneville. And they did seismic testing. The design of this north wall is a buttressed walls holding back the water. And with the seismic testing, that's not going to work. If we have a earthquake,
holding back what water? First.
The wall in the nav lock. The water in the nav lock. This is the north wall of the nav lock,
right.
And it's buttressed. I was going to read.
Is it
this.
The buttress or the wall itself?
It's actually a hollow wall with buttresses in it, and what they want to do is fill it up with concrete for seismic safety. And
what's your most risky place on the whole district?
Pardon?
The list of dangers at dams.
I don't have any idea.
Probably this was their top one.
Yeah, this is critical, and it's not going to be good if it goes. Mm-hmm. So what they've got to do is fill it up with concrete, and they can't use rebar.
The nav lock's empty, right?
The nav lock is empty.
Against the empty nav lock, and it's the wall of the nav lock, the old nav lock, which is not decommissioned yet. So.
It's a weak spot in the dam.
Why don't you just fill the nav lock?
Because they haven't decommissioned it. Yeah. Because it's there. I think it's there in case something happens.
Yeah. Well, the gate downstream.
Hey, I'm not sure about the downstream. Gary, there's a picture in your notes.
Yeah, page 6 on your notes.
I know.
You want to fill the nav block with water? It won't hold water with the downstream miter gate. It kind of equalizes right around tailwater. You have some water leaking in from the forebay, but it's still mostly right around tailwater.
Okay, so I understand.
Yeah. So anyhow, that doesn't help if you rattle the wall either. I mean, it's still, if the wall goes, we've got a problem. So what they want to do is fill it with concrete, and in order to do that, they're requesting a six to seven month, which actually they've changed from what's there on 6.5, a 6 to 7 month work window. They're planning on staging on the south wall and pumping across, probably, although they wanted to know if it was a viable option to have the concrete staged from a barge on the north side of the north wall, which is at the powerhouse.
Yeah, right kind of after the 1-1 entrance.
Yeah.
Not a good place to be. For water.
For
water entrance. Right. If they happen to drip anything in the river, it'll strike them.
Well, they're going to shut down, my understanding is they're going to shut down the turbines on that half of powerhouse, and that's low priority anyhow. Powerhouse 2.
But those are the priority units for that powerhouse.
They are. Unit 1.
Well, they're going to have to... Well, my understanding is they're not going to use that half of the powerhouse if they have anything in the water there. And, of course, that's why the engineers need to be here instead of me.
That's a problem.
So it sounds like...
Yeah, that's a much larger problem than just staging the barge there.
Very large
I don't think that had been mentioned before.
Let's see, February through August.
Yeah, no.
Not
good. No, that unit 1 is priority unit. We're going to crash into the Oregon side there. So unit 1 is priority.
February to August.
Why didn't they need a barge? Is it just an option to be cheaper, or do you need more land, or what?
No, there's... they were wanting to stage their crane, if they don't do the concrete pumping from that side, and that was one thought they had, but it looks like now they're going to do that from the south side and just pump it across the lock, but they want to see if they can put in a barge crane that will direct the trimmy flow into where they're working. There's not a lot of staging area on the north side of the
north. Did you say you cannot fill up the original nav block?
Yeah, it'll hold water for a while.
But it doesn't solve the seismic issues.
No. But can you float a barge in there?
Oh,
the barge, yeah.
To be in, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
the barge
know.
You're trying to work from because you're putting it inside the original.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Because I know if it's not decommissioned, then it's
well, you
be
could,
using.
But you could open the upstream miter gates in theory, and it would stay at forebay. If you can open the upstream miter gates.
Well, it's not decommissioned, right?
Correct.
So it has to be usable.
It doesn't actually have to be full if you're pumping up.
No.
There was a huge celebration when the downstream miter gates actually operated and closed. So as far as whether or not it's operable.
You guys have a problem there. Okay, so you don't know whether you can put a barge in there or on the south side. What I'm saying is that those units need to run. One, two, there needs to be one adult attraction and two overflow for the ice trench this sewer, which is now our bypass system for that powerhouse. So those are important.
Okay.
And we can't have those out until August.
Could you build a platform over the nav block that would be a work area?
And then you could actually put your cement.
Would this support?
Anyway, there's lots of options.
I don't know that that'd be safe.
Well, the point is, right now, we don't want something that would stop units 1, 2, 3 from operating. And I would be very concerned about anything that got into the water because FV1-1 is the intake for the Bradford Island, or the, the Bradford Island ladder, and for the collection channel. Definitely don't want anything getting into that water supply from construction activity. Those are the two key concerns.
I'm a little confused. Did you say that if they pump from the
south side over the lock. They still would like to have a work area on the barge.
Right. They wanted to have a barge-mounted crane that would direct the trimming.
Just position the nozzle? Or
yeah.
Okay. So they wouldn't be actually handling the concrete on that side.
Right.
Yeah,
well, they, actually, that their first proposal was.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And they wanted to know if that would be an option.
What we don't want, and
right.
I'll let
okay.
these guys figure
right.
out how to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, that's,
yeah.
That's your business. But
right.
what we don't want to have is anything getting in the water. We don't want to have those units shut off. So if there's something that requires the first few units to be shut off, that's a major problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a question about the lock itself. The area you're filling, I presume there's old drainage pipes and things like that in there. Are those going to be, if I was thinking concrete effluent or runoff, go through the old drains in the walls of the
right.
lock?
Yeah, there won't be any of that. I mean, they're going to have to pump the water that's in there out, plug up the holes so that they can pump
there's
and not lose
them,
their
sure.
concrete. Yeah, and they have a plan for treating the water that's currently in there before it's either carried off or discharged into the river. They'll have to meet all the water quality standards to do that and be permitted to do that. But yeah, they recognize that there's issues there of trying to plug everything. That
yeah, I could just see it happening where you have all the mitigation measures in place and then it goes out the original drain.
Yeah, yeah. No, they actually have been on site looking at how to deal with that issue.
Yeah,
for sure, because they don't want to spend money on concrete that's not doing the job.
How about the base? Is it permeable gravel or is it unbonded? Is that just poured concrete unbonded?
Yeah, I don't know.
Body rock.
Can you not have a barge there in front of the turbines if they're operating? I'm just
you
that
can.
Issue.
I don't know why those units would have to be off. The only time we normally take them off is when the barge comes in, and then once it's there, we turn them back on.
Yeah, that, just okay. Let you guys worry okay. about the details. those are the side.
But that won't be. I don't understand why they would have to take the south turbine units out since it's going to be in front of 1-1 to begin with. It's pretty far over.
Yeah.
There's three okay. fishery related issues. There's the adult attraction from unit 1, there's overflow for the ice trash loose way at the exit, and there's flow for attraction because those open gates down there at units 1 and 3 are important gates, especially 1.
Are there any concerns with predation?
If there was no flow, or predation always a cover? It could. It depends how much activity there is and stuff like that.
Would there be any restrictions for activity on a working barge there as far as time of day?
There wouldn't be anything for adults. Be some juvie. You're going to be far enough away, I think, from unit 1. I'd have to see where you're going to be sitting this thing in. Far up from the powerhouse, there's unit 1 here.
Yeah,
so
okay.
where would you be out?
I assume they're going to just want to set it right here along this wall.
And how far out does it stick out?
Well,
that just what you drew there?
That depends.
No,
I don't know. I mean,
that'd be
depends.
No problem, but
yeah.
if it stuck, if it was something that was out here, you know,
yeah.
that couldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
But no,
okay.
no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Is there any requirement for downstream water testing like you did for the in-water pours?
Depends on if there's anything that's going to get out.
Right.
You know? It's not really an in-water pour if there's no drains to the river, so it'd probably be okay. But that's water quality guys will have to
yeah.
watch it in Oregon,
yeah,
especially.
Yeah, permitting on that.
Yeah.
So do this need an extension to the in-water work period, or because it's all in land?
If they have barges and things outside, you know, on the river, then yeah, there's noise and, you know, associated with their cranes moving. And
but there's something they can consider getting work done that needs the barge versus something they be able to do completely from shore.
Well, in-water work is something you do have to go through, but I don't see a problem there. I don't think that's the issue here.
To extend?
Yeah. I mean, if it's very little and minor and it's a long ways away from the ladder exit, and it's closest to the sluiceway, ice trash sluiceway entrance of unit 1, but looking at this, it's still a long ways away from that, too, so I wouldn't anticipate a problem.
unless you had, you know, bright lights. Are you working 24 hours a day, or is this just the daytime
operation? I'm not
sure
they know at this point.
Bright lights would be an issue.
Okay.
But, you know, we don't want to have this thing all lit up like a factory in the middle of the night. But. Probably okay. It's just the shutdown of the powerhouse, that would be an issue that we have trouble with.
Okay. So I'll talk to him about that.
So yeah, can we just continue you as coming to FBOM updating us on this as this develops?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and if you need stuff sooner, then just run it through Tammy and myself. Okay.
Sounds good. Move on. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Okay. Agenda item 7, Smith Root study proposal.
He couldn't make it today, so he asked me to fill in. What they're looking to do is put a Vitsi camera in the UMT to see if it works as a monitoring tool. And so the form has been sent out by a Tandy, and I wanted to collect any comments if they're working.
Mason, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Coming in loud and clear, Matt.
Anything else you need, Matt?
I don't think so. I mean, we visited the UMT a couple of weeks ago relative to the size of the array that Smith Root is proposing. We had one of our DISN experts out there, and there's a possibility we might want to float the DISN camera down into that UMT tunnel. To get away from the air bubbles and have a sort of a larger upstream field of view. And I think I sent Tammy, maybe a couple of other folks, I sent a photo of the barge that our crews have been using up at Cowlitz Falls, just to give you guys an idea of how they build these things, and it could be modified for use in the UMT. So it basically just floats on the surface, and the distant camera actually going to be just subsurface a few inches. We don't have any plans to put the distant down on the bottom and disrupt flows and all that kind of stuff.
So Matt,
I sure would like to go out there in the next week or two and just go out and drop the Ditson in there without the barge, drop it in there, go for a day and get it in there, and we just want to see what we can see, basically, is what we want to do. Now.
Are you looking for comments on that issue, or are you looking on comments for the barge, or what are we talking about here today?
Well, I mean, you tell me. I mean, I didn't know that this was on the agenda, and
I didn't know today either.
We're trying to get the okay to just go to the dam for a day and just test the Ditson.
Who put this on the agenda?
Actually, Shane did, but he couldn't make it today.
Oh.
And so the proposal was actually to test it with the barge, but if you want to do it with the camera and the barge, is that okay? And I'm not sure if they're ambitious. One day is probably good enough, but could we approve 2 days just in case something breaks on the first day?
Oh.
We could try the barge also if we get an opportunity to do so, but the guy who was there with us he had a pretty high degree of confidence that it wasn't going to be much of a problem.
Well, I have a lot of concerns here, Matt. You know, we need to talk about the barge, how we're going to put that in there, attachments.
Yeah.
I don't think we want this thing banging around. I don't think you guys want it banging around.
Nope.
That flow moves pretty good through there, so it needs to have, you know, ropes and things probably aren't good enough. It may have to have some more rigid bars that attach it to the side of the UMT. You know, they can allow it to go up or down, but I don't want it banging back and forth in there in that flow. I don't think you guys do either. And that may require somebody in a work basket to go down and put some concrete anchors in or something in the wall. But we'd need to have that discussion, about how rigid this thing needs to be in place. And I realize, and there isn't that much up or down either, really. It doesn't have, that UMT is fairly constant. elevation, so you know, maybe 6 inches or so up or down. So it could have an arm that holds it in place. In fact, it maybe doesn't need to be floating at all. It could actually just be sitting there with a 1 foot footprint instead of a 3 foot footprint. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ideas on how to approach.
Yeah, yeah.
Our guy was, and I won't say that I necessarily agreed with him, but his level of confidence is pretty high. But he was suggesting that you could achieve what you're asking. Was that Gary?
Yeah.
You could achieve what you're asking via ropes and cables and center that thing into the UMT on a more or less temporary permanent basis.
Yeah.
And it would be narrower than the UMT. And, yeah, I agree, Hunter, and they have no interest in banging that thing around.
Yeah, we don't want it to disrupt fish. We want to make sure, you know, I've taken enough. I don't know what the image looks like when you have a moving camera, but...
We don't want that.
Yeah, I can imagine that could be a bit of a problem, so...
We could probably get by, if we could just go for a half day or something and just get the Ditson in the water and take a look down there. And
okay.
We're primarily interested in the effect of the air bubbles that we see, because the UMT's got that curve in it that's upstream from the counting window.
Right.
And it does create a lot of turbulence and air bubbles.
Right.
And with adult salmonids, we don't think it's going to be a problem. We think we'll be able to see them clearly. But it would be nice to check it out before this thing maybe goes fully ahead.
Yeah, you'll need to be...
About the barge idea, you guys can chew on that idea. Maybe we can get some more information to you about how we might do it so you guys can decide whether you think it's a good idea or not.
Gary, well, do you know how you fixed it in the dowels?
Mm-hmm.
How did we fix it in the Dallas spot?
It was in the forebay. And the same thing at the pipe. Yeah, it's actually hard fixed.
Still I-beam pipe. It was attached to the face of the dam and then it's...
The same as the corner collector platform too. But yeah, that's what gave me the idea of having more rigid attachment than the ropes and things. But well,
sure.
We have quite a few fish going through that. Let's see, I'm not sure what's going through the UMT right now, but we do have, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 fish a day still going through Bonneville, so I'm a little bit concerned about throwing things in the water at this point.
Well, you do understand that this thing, if we ever used the Ditson, it would be a surface mount.
I know, I understand. But what you do for this test could be anything, right?
For this test, no. We have no plans. We don't see any reason to even talk about putting that Ditson any more than 6 inches below the surface.
Okay.
I mean, it's just not going to fly.
Right.
They're They're reasonable size cameras, and it'll be a major disruption to flow. So
yeah, you'll be measuring the wrong thing. But you're really mostly concerned about bubbles for this rather than fish.
Yeah, we'd like to see some fish. We know there's probably some fish going through there. It'd be a good little
nice
test for us to, because we wrote this up in our proposal. I think some of you guys may have the draft study plan that I've put together for this upcoming UMT work, if it goes. And what we put in the proposal is we are proposing using the Ditson. It would be nice, however, before we go to full implementation, to at least give ourselves some idea about its efficacy.
Yeah.
And I think we can go there with two or three guys, and we could set it in the water, center it a bit, take some film, and then get out of there. You know, we just want to see what they're going to look like.
What you're looking for mainly is whether the bubbles cause a problem.
Right.
And then you'll get a look at some fish. You've got nothing to test, so it's just look at fish. All I'm saying, Matt, is that right now we've got a surprising number of fish still moving through the ladder, and I'd rather not have people in there mucking around until the bubbles aren't going anywhere. They'll be there all the time. As these fish numbers drop down, yeah, you got fish going through the UMT as well as through the Washington ladders. I think you'll have targets, but I'm a little uncomfortable with going in there
right within the next few days anyway.
Okay, we can wait. We're in not a super hurry.
Yeah, that's what I want to know is what, you know, what can we wait for, you know, till the end of October maybe, or is that waiting too long for you guys?
No, I think that's fine, Gary. We're not in any hurry. To be perfectly honest with you, it's unclear to me whether this project is even going to go. We're assuming that I haven't heard anything to the contrary, and probably the most important thing for us, if for those of you who have our study plan, is the other way that we'd like to monitor fish is we'd like to put in a couple of flat plate pit tag detectors on the bottom of that UMT. And I don't know if you guys have read that yet. We want a redundant method of monitoring fish behavior. We've already investigated the number of pit tag fish potentially going through that UMT. So it has good potential to tell us something about what happens when they encounter that device. But we don't, that's more of a time crunch for us, because if we do get permission to install flat plate detectors on the bottom of the UMT, that has to occur in that one day in December or whatever when that UMT gets partially dewatered. But we can test the Didson. We don't have to test the Didson right now. We can test it a month from now. That's fine with us.
Okay, we need to talk about our criteria for what we're observing as a response on these fish too. I'm not sure that a pit tag detector is going to help us too much. I mean, if we're seeing that,
you have to read the study plan.
Yeah, I will.
I think it's very clear in there about how we want to use pit tags and what they'll tell us.
We're going to have a discussion about that.
We can have a discussion about that.
Yeah, and that's. Are we talking about this on what?
Tomorrow.
Is this going to be on tomorrow's agenda for the SRWG meeting or something?
August idea.
The new final proposals are out, so this obviously they haven't seen it, because I haven't downloaded this.
I've got the agenda. I just haven't read everything on there. I don't know if this is
one
of the items.
On there.
Well, everything that's funded, but this isn't funded through CORE anyway.
No,
so
BPA. Oh, that's true.
BPA, BPA proposal, but you guys, it sounds like you guys didn't get the study plan.
No, they didn't.
I haven't seen it.
It just got sent out.
I've been gone, so.
Okay. Oh, nobody's seen it.
No, I sent it to Bonneville.
No, there's a coordination form.
I know that Smith Root has it.
Okay.
You have to see it.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet, so we need to have probably a chance to read through it, and then a chance to sit down and talk to you guys about the overall criteria and what we're going to judge as a response, and the negative response, positive response, whatever.
And I think that was intended to be at our next DEFCON.
Next DEFCON?
It was supposed to be at this one. Because in September, that was, since the proposal was going to be at the end of September,
the idea was.
Ah.
Well, it's out now. What I'll do maybe is, Gary, I can, or if you guys give me somebody you want me to send it to, and then that person could maybe distribute it to who needs to see it.
Matt, if you can send it to me, this is Tammy, I'll send it out to everyone and include it in the minutes.
And then, Tammy, send that to, someone or on the district so they can put it on their FTP site so other people that don't get the FPOM can go and download it.
And then we'll have to have a separate discussion, since the final proposal review discussion is tomorrow. That's too soon. So we'll have to have a separate discussion about this one. I don't think people want to wait till October. This is October, November.
No, I mean, we should, it's not a 50-page document, so you guys will get through it pretty fast.
Yeah, that's
the draft. It'd be great to have a bunch of your guys' ideas, and then we should talk about it, because if the pit tagging stuff does go, there is a purchasing and sort of a logistical deadline we'd have to meet. So I will send that study plan to Tammy right now, and then she can distribute it to you guys. And I guess for now what I'm hearing is we'll just wait on any Didson tests until we hear back from you guys.
Yeah, I don't, Matt, yeah. I don't see a problem doing that a little later on. We just need to look at our fish runs and see how
not a problem.
Drop off and, you know, make sure there's a few fish there so you can look at them. But so
no problem.
We don't want to wait too long because we want actually to be able to see some fish.
Right. Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, we're at, what, 7,000, 8,000 fish right now, and coho run will be dropping off here pretty quick. And when that happens, then that'd be a good time to... I mean, we had 5,500 coho 2 days ago.
Yeah, we proposed after the 12th, so that seems to be taking into account the dropping numbers.
I don't know. I mean, we have more fish than I would have expected when I looked at the webs.
If we get a target back from you, Gary, a number, then when you get this threshold, you're okay with it? Why?
Less than 1,000 fish a day is what we normally do.
Am I the only one concerned? I don't think so.
Well, no.
Let's have a committee discussion about that. But I would say, yeah, if we get down into the 1,000.
Do we really have fish better to UMT regardless?
We can look at the Bradford and Washington Shore split. That's about all we can look at.
Attraction.
Yeah. Kind of make a guess.
It's a lot less. That's
the only thing I'm worried about, is because without spill, you're kind of getting into UMT. So if you're going to do the UMT and have fish there, you probably want to do this sooner rather than later. I don't know, but that's what I'm saying.
What's the date you were saying, Matt? Was you wanted to do this?
The targeted install date for the Smith Root array, and then we were going to use the same day to get pit tag equipment in there. But sometime in late December.
Hey, Gary.
Well, when did you want to get in there and do the initial Didson?
Oh, we can go in there anytime, you guys. We're not.
But you were proposing the 12th.
Any time in the next 2 or 3 weeks is fine. We can wait for fish numbers to reduce. It would be great to see a few fish, and I'm confident we will.
Yeah,
that's really all we want to do is go in there and check it out.
What if they did it on the 27th when we're already shutting down everything at Cascades Island?
27th of October?
Yeah.
What's that date? What are you doing?
Spillway survey, the velocity testing. It's, you'd have all your impacts on one day.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that would there be fish there?
You'd still have fish moving through if they're in the ladder.
Yeah. Yep, that'd be a good day.
If there's no fish in it, that's a problem.
But if their main purpose is to look at bubbles, because if bubbles are going to impact their ability to see anything else, then there's no point in even going forward.
Never a time when bubbles aren't there.
We don't think that the bubbles are going to be too big of a problem because of the size of the fish.
You just need to decide how far downstream. It would be a problem up close, I think, because they're pretty bad.
But you know, we were in there when we were looking at the UMT. If Smith Root puts that thing just a bit downstream from the curve, we still have a pretty good distance there, probably 20 feet or so, 25 feet or so before you go into that tunnel.
Right.
And that may be all we need. We're going to be seeing these fish from overhead.
If you get down past there, right at the downstream end of the count window, you'll be fine.
This is way downstream of that. So maybe we'll be fine, and the whole barge idea is...
Of the UMT count window?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the device, when I was out there, and Smith Root may think differently, but when I was out there, I think that the electrical device, the array thing, is going to be placed, maybe the upstream end of it might be near the count window or even a little bit upstream of it, and then it'll end... And then there's still room there, like I said,
there
before
is,
you get
yeah.
into that tunnel.
All I'm saying
so
is that that
we may not need to. I mean, the whole barge idea may be just a moot point. You know, we might be able to just lower the Didson below the surface, just at the entrance of that tunnel, and be able to see fine.
You'll have to support it somehow, so that
of course.
Something from the shore, from the wall. Okay, well, we'll talk about that. The support and how that thing sets. And there will be important, but yeah. What do you think, Tom? The matter.
I mean
we're getting close to 10,000, between 5,000 and 10,000 fish a day. That's a lot of fish.
I know some things.
How many are in the UMT?
That's one thing. The UMT only going to get ones from Cascade.
Less than 25% of what's going past the project.
Probably.
Still a lot of fish.
Could be.
Even less than that.
So 8,000 fish a day.
Yeah, we're at, I'd say once we get down to 5,000 a day, something like that.
So 5,000?
Yeah. That would that probably puts it out another week or so anyway.
Yeah. Say if it's only getting 10%, 5,000, it's 500 through there. If they're running through the whole time, as you know. To me, I'm also looking to kind of get a little bit of a, almost a bit of a baseline look to see, can you detect some behavior of fish with the DITSIN? Because that's basically the whole concept of the DITSIN is, can we detect behavior with it?
Right.
And I hope we can, otherwise we basically just shot ourselves a mirror of discussing about this,
yeah.
Which I've had better things to do.
So you think it's worth taking a risk and putting it in earlier? It may,
no.
Let, you know,
I think 500 fish is enough.
I mean, the thing's going to have scent on it.
Yeah.
You put it in there, there could be a fish reaction to it for a little while.
I think if you've got about 5,000, you can get a couple hundred fish to be there.
Yeah.
I think that's plenty.
So you're saying 5,000 for the day, that's the whole project?
Yeah, 5,000 for the day, yeah. And if you got a couple hundred,
okay.
UMC, that's probably...
Let's do that. That's minimal risk.
I think we'd probably, I'm guessing here, I'd have to talk to our DITSIN guy, but I think we'd probably only have it in the water for maybe an hour, and that's all we need. We don't need to sit there and film.
Just do it.
We just want to see some fish and, you know, see some bubbles. And then
I thought I heard a day or 2 days.
Oh, we're figuring it's going to take us a day, you know, get it down there.
You're only going to have it in for an hour or so.
Oh, yeah, just we want to figure out a way to temporarily just lower it down there and keep it stable, film for about an hour, and then we're done. We don't have any plans on leaving it in there for hours.
Okay, then the fit at any time after the 12th is fine. That's fine. That's a week from now, 6 days.
Yeah, an hour or two.
Yeah, what you're planning is to do it on the 12th.
Anytime after the 12th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Okay. Well, we'll let you guys. We'll talk about it here and let you guys know what day works for us. And
yeah, whatever works for you guys.
But it sounds like you have the green light anytime after the 12th to go do it.
Yeah.
And send the date to Tammy.
Okay.
For her to send out. Thanks.
You're good to go.
Matt, this is Dave Wills. I'm wondering, do you have any feeling for bubble impact on seeing other fish besides Chinook, like maybe lamprey or something?
Yeah. Our DITSIN guy thinks that because of the size of these fish and because of the, you can see lampreys pretty clearly on the DITSIN.
Okay.
We don't really think, we have no reason right now to think we're going to have much of a problem.
Okay.
I mean, we fully expect to be able to see these animals if they're going to react to that device. We fully expect to see it, either hesitation or stopping or turning around. They film lampreys before. Adults on monitors stand out like a sore thumb. And the neat thing about it is, I don't know if you guys realize this, but even though the camera is viewing upstream, we'll be viewing these animals as if we're filming overhead. So it really provides a great opportunity to see their behavior when they enter the array. And we'll have that all delineated in the field of view distance-wise, but we'll know where they are. So, I mean, the level of confidence is high. Our DITSIN guy would just, in order to go to that 100% level, he'd like to see it, you know? He'd like to see it, but they've used this thing in a lot up at Cowlitz Falls, and they've been filming smolts, and it's pretty amazing what they can see. And we've also used it filming spawning by chum salmon down below Bonneville, the Eyes Island, that area.
And I've seen those clips.
And I mean, they're right there. So yeah, I mean, we're confident it'll work. And to be perfectly honest with you, we're scratching our heads on what kind of choices we have to try to get a handle on the behavior of fish when they do encounter the array.
Yeah, and we're scratching our heads on how much we want to put up with before we say it doesn't, you know, stop.
Yep.
So that'll be a point of discussion when we get a chance to meet.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you've got what you're looking for. Go ahead to do this for an hour or two on some day after the 12th of October and let us know how it works. And let's have a discussion about how we actually deploy the thing for the real season test.
Okay. And I will send Tammy the study plan that she can get to you guys and maybe sometime in the next 3 weeks or whatever, we can have a discussion on that.
Yeah, okay.
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 Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's move along. We are now on agenda item 8, the Dow sluiceway outage for transducer installation.
All right, well, I'll take this one. Obviously, this thing has been getting kicked around through Fitterwig and FPOM, and then Gary's sent out a memo on what his recommendation is, and I think everybody's read it. Basically, it's a repeat of last year's test with an exception on the flow. Last year's test, it was, now correct me if I'm wrong, 6 gates were open from 1 to 15, 14 November, and then 15 November, 15 December, it was reduced flow. Is that correct? No.
It was never reduced flow.
No, it was never reduced flow, so it was
off.
But it went to mid-December.
It was never off.
Last year. It went to mid-December last year.
Then it was
year.
Off. And then,
then it came back on March. Right, in March.
All 6 March gates. So 6 gates, no, none, and then 6 gates. And what we're, what the proposal this year is 4 gates all the time for the whole season. We'll see what we get.
So
the season or just until the season starts?
Yeah.
Until
April 10th. Of April, and then we're back to full season operation.
But the one point you are making here is that this is an exception from the fish passage
plan
for the
month of November.
For this test.
Yep, for this test only.
And then
to clarify,
we'll...
that's 4 gates for the month of November.
November and March.
And then the March period.
March period to April.
So the outside of the normal period and November, it's going to be 4 gates instead of 6.
And the 4 gates that was recommended is 1-2, 1-3, 18-1, 18-2 by Fenton, based on his data.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah. And
1-1's off. 15-2's off.
Yeah. 1-2, 1-3, 18-1, 18-2. Yeah, 1-1's got low.
Sorry,
yeah.
I should tell you which ones are off.
No.
We're not really excited about this as a long-term operation. We can tolerate it, stomach it, not keep on it for a one-year test, but after that, we're going to have a serious discussion about what we're doing for long term.
Yeah, I suspect we'll have lots of fun discussions after next year's data comes in.
So we're going to put all these fingers in the freezer and bring it back out.
Be a good round. Yeah. Actually, just leave them out.
wait, we're not done yet. We're not done
really
yet. So, does anybody have issues with that plan? Going around.
Unanimous F palm support.
December and January is closed.
I don't want to go support. Yeah. Let's just put, I'm not going to scream too much.
No strenuous F palm objection.
And the other thing,
Kruger still online.
Yeah, the other issue is October 27th. There's also a dive plan to check any of the bad transducers. So Fenton's going to go out there, check all the transducers, and have a dive ready to go if he has to replace with his spares.
Okay.
Now that he's going to check on the 27th and dive on the 28th.
There's actually two parts to that, because they have to put in the transducers in front of the sluice gates, which will require 5 hours of sluiceway outage to do that.
Yeah, also if,
that's work that needs to be done.
Fish unit.
And then secondary is the dive on standby. So if any of the transducers between now and then, if they find any transducers on the powerhouse that are bad, that's when we'll need to dive for a second day.
That sluiceway has to be out again.
So the first part is the 5 hour outage for the first part. Excuse
me. It's highly likely that no diving will be necessary as long as all the transducers are operating properly.
Yeah, they've been good so far.
The other part of this too is that one of the fish units will be off
For
one of those, or maybe both.
Yep, two.
2 hours?
For a couple hours.
2 hours.
Okay.
I don't like sluiceway out, but okay.
All right.
Do it. Got to get it done.
Nod. That's a good enough nod. Done.
Done.
A shrug nod.
Rick, you still on the phone?
Kruger.
Yep, I'm here.
You good with this operation?
I think
yeah,
we're still on
I won't object to it.
Okay, thank you.
So when F2 is out, then we'll increase F1.
Yeah, you'll be
those
do the best you can to meet criteria.
Yeah, we'll come close.
This should be okay. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Item 9, galvanized grates. Cordy wants to know when a final decision will be made and wanted to also talk about the benefits of
yeah.
zebra muscle control.
Well, we've been doing, some digging on getting ready for the zebra muscles. I suppose when they show up.
Can't hear you.
Come on up.
Okay. So we've been doing some prep work for in preparation for zebra mussels when they show up, and one of the things that we noticed on there was galvanized grating or galvanized steel was a good anti-fouling tool. So the question is,
it's poison,
are we
it's still aquatic life?
Are we still with the information we have, or with the limited information we have for fish passage detriment for galvanization, do we still want to go that route?
Still go
do we
route.
Still want to ban galvanized steel?
Well, we haven't banned it yet.
I don't think we have.
We found that we didn't detect detectable amounts in the ladder. And so,
right.
But we thought we put this on the bed and we're okay with continuing to use galvanized.
Well, where we left it off was if we have to replace something, we will with what we have on the galvanized, but we have no plans on replacing large sections of it right now until this issue is resolved once and for all. And that's where I understood it was left.
Have you been doing the monitoring and the data you've got? Have
yep.
Are you any plans to put that out for folks to see and look at?
Are you talking about the water sample?
Yeah, the results. Or maybe even write that up.
Yeah, it's been written up.
Has it?
Yeah. It's been written up and brought to F on. Yeah. But we're at a decision point now. We need to figure out what we're doing. We're just going to go in and do all these little patches. If you have a bad grading, one grading panel on a section, our plan is to replace the whole section, you know, not just the one grading.
Right.
Because once you start tearing into it, you might as well do the whole section.
Right.
Do you need some more time to look at the report that... Maybe send it out again so everyone has a
water sample report.
The yeah. water sample report. You wrote that all up,
it.
And all the samples that you guys did
were
had the results of the analysis
came in under threshold.
They all came in
detectable.
Under, yep,
threshold.
The only one that came over was the control where we actually poured it right over the grating that we have on deck, and
right.
so it does give off.
It does give off zinc, yeah.
So it has to be,
I guess,
but the dilution factor is...
My question is, you know, I got to look at it. You guys are out there, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. I don't know if, Tom, have you looked at this thing?
I didn't know if I reported on it.
The questions I would have, you know, is, you know, it's dose, classical dose response. And, you know, if you've got one or two panels that are done and you test the ladder and it's okay, that's fine. What if every panel in the ladder was done? Would that then what would you get? You know, and if they're all out there leaching out some zinc, then so the work you did was specific to the question of should we use the panels we have on deck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it addresses the question of should we coat this ladder from end to end. I mean, all the diffusers, every grating was zinc.
Well, I know that the grating team has been district, and I haven't heard anything on it in a long time, but I mean, they're looking at alternatives to zinc.
We talked about powder coating.
Zinc is banned. That's what they're going with.
Well, I don't think we should have zinc in the ladder. I mean, if it's toxic to fish or zebra mussels, either way, it shouldn't be in the ladder.
Now the
question, though. That's why it raised concern for me, because if we're looking at getting these zebra mussels in 5 years, like experts are saying, we need to deal with them.
For 20 years.
Yeah, so they'll never be here?
I don't know.
I mean, they're on our doorstep.
Yeah, we
right
keep
now.
hearing it, and if they are, yeah. They are. You know, but these, whether or not you have zinc in the ladder, isn't going to change that fact one way or the other.
It's
the least of our worries. That'll be the easiest thing to clean off, actually.
By dewatering the ladder mid-season, they're saying every 3 months we got to dry it up.
Well, we'll see.
I mean, we're going to have a nightmare to deal with.
And it isn't going to be just the diffuser grains. It's going to be your entire system from end to end.
This is
the least of the concerns.
That's probably the most of the concern, for as far as I'm concerned.
What about your
pumps? You're looking at the entire.
What about
fish
your
way?
Water? The whole conduit through there. Everything will be a problem.
Yeah.
It isn't just going to be.
So a little preparation might be good or bad.
Yeah, well, just don't throw a baby out the bathwater. Make sure that you don't poison family in the process of taking care of our zebra mussels.
So we have confirmation that we are. I mean, we don't know that, right?
Like I just said, I'll look at the report, but if you go out there and replace 3% or 10% of the panels with zinc, do your testing and say, okay, we're good. Now we can do the other 90%. Do you see a flaw there? I mean, I do. It's a dilution factor. If the dilution factor is such that...
five sets of samples already.
Right, but...
and we haven't seen anything yet.
Right, and how many of the panels are zinc? How many... What percentage of all the diffuser panels that are going to go in are zinc?
North side, it was 100%. They were all done, and it was, I don't know how many years passed from the time we installed to the time we tested. It was probably 5-6 years.
100%.
We did them
of
all.
The north side.
North side, the dowels.
The north ladder.
North, okay. The north ladder at the dowels.
Okay. So
we did 100% with zinc.
It took a water sample 5 years later.
Perfect. It was like 2000.
Well, are all those details included in your report?
They're in the report.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems like the next step is just, even though you sent them, just resend them so that we can bring it back next month. It seems like we gotta somehow make a decision here one way or another.
Yeah, we need a decision on the project just to determine what we need to do, because when the grading is falling apart, we need to deal with it.
Yeah.
And we would like to do a little preventative maintenance rather than deal with it after it's already.
And what's on the table is, are these just zinc, or do we coat them with, they can be zinc, but we were throwing around the idea of coating them, powder coating them.
Powder coating them.
Basically,
yeah.
And letting it wear off with time, and that would reduce the amount of zinc that's available for leaching.
But Gary,
which we don't know if that is the solution, right?
But we didn't think, what we're trying to do is, we're trying to restart this discussion with the zebra mussel, now quagga mussel, well-defined, because before we didn't have that forecast that they would be here potentially within 5 years. I don't think it was a factor in the grading.
I'm just not going to stampede because of that. I mean, I've been hearing that since the day one on the job here. I've got zebra mussels up in my office that I've had in a vial of alcohol for about 25 years. So, I mean, that was Jim Adhern screaming and shouting, they're going to be here tomorrow, you better do something. They probably will be, whatever.
What I hate to do is replace them all with powder coat or something else and not even consider zebra mussels, and then find out, maybe we should have went with zinc.
Is zinc being used on the East Coast or anywhere else as a control?
That's what we're trying to dig up all the information we can right now. But what they've come up with, the two best anti-fouling is copper and zinc galvanized.
Because they're both toxic to aquatic life.
Yeah, those are.
That's the whole point.
They're not toxic to fish, thank God. So that's solve the fish problems.
Got to remove all those copper flumes in the fishways.
Well, you know, when we replaced the grating on the north side at the dowels, you remember I asked that question, is zinc a problem? And the F-POM consensus then was, it's moving water, don't worry about it. If it's a recirculation system, if it's a hatchery, if it's a pond, don't use it. If it's moving water, don't worry about it. Put it in. And that was the EPCOM decision at that time. So.
Yeah.
That's where I'm calling.
Yeah, we don't really have the solid data. I mean, toxic to fish. I mean, they're not. Are they belly up in the ladder now?
I mean, no, you know they're not. I mean, that wasn't the point. I did
just
write
trying
a.
To figure it out.
If we go back less than to 2001, I did. I don't remember what year it was, where I put together some information on this, presented to the group. It wasn't toxic to the point of killing fish. What I don't want to do is have fish reject.
Yep.
And they rejected zinc at very low levels in the ladder.
Rainbow trout and bimbo. I don't even know what a bimbo looks like. But anyway.
Yeah, if you can show me salmon, I think you have to be cautious. That's the whole point. And if you can't, those levels are probably at the threshold of what those fish could smell or detect. So we use those as our criteria. If you're well below that criteria, then we're probably okay. But what there's still the issue of how much zinc you're putting in the ladder versus the amount of flow going through the ladder. If the north ladder and the amount of zinc that you put in there is relative to the other locations we're doing this, then it makes sense. But there's a logical process that you need to go through here, I think, rather than just voting around the table. I'm okay, no problem, go ahead. Have you really done an analysis of that? That's
okay,
all I'm saying. Is
so where are we at and what do we need to do?
We need to go through that analytical process. That's
okay.
All I'm saying.
And what have we done?
We've got
you so far.
Done some work. I haven't had a chance to review it. I don't know if you've got anything that relates to the amount of zinc, the amount of flow through that ladder, and how that looks relative to other systems like the east ladder, if we were to outfit it completely. Is that about the same ratio of dilution flow to
Remember,
zinc?
Schlenker did a hydraulic analysis as well, just to try to figure out dilution factor. Do you remember that?
I just need all this in front of me. I've got a million things that we have to deal with every day.
He did with just ladder flow, and that was right on the line.
Well,
that
the ladder flows ladder are about the same, ladder to ladder, but the attraction flows are very different.
Yeah,
and you're talking about diffusers all the way across the powerhouse, too. So that's a lot of diffusers, and that's a lot of gratings.
No, not across the powerhouse. They wouldn't be replaced.
But they wouldn't.
No. They're not used.
What you have in there, then, is they're not used because we shut down the offices.
Yeah.
So those would be just whatever's there.
Yeah.
So that's, that goes. Yeah,
you know, we're getting really close here. We only have about an hour left, and there's a bunch of things left on the agenda. We really need to move because this room is getting shut down not too long from now. So I think the next step is send out the information that we have so that we have all the information that we have on the table and people are aware of it. Then we can talk about the gaps. What new information do we need to know before we can make the next step, and what are the future decisions made? But right now, let's get the information back on the table so we're all talking off the same sheet of music and where we can talk about remaining needs that we can identify.
Okay,
and let's
so I'll
do that.
Send out everything we have so far, and then next step on, then we can figure out what the gaps are.
So
go from there.
Bob's the chair of the new zinc work group. And we'll have
TAS groups. I thought those were bad.
There's a new one.
But we do need to move along, and so with that, we will move to agenda item 10, John Day Spillbay 2 outage for maintenance. Coordination form, page 7.
Yeah, that issue came up because it's kind of difficult to explain. It is because of the new fiscal year coming up. That's what it was, as I discovered lately. First, when they asked me, it was late. We didn't get enough advance notice, but all spillway gates need to be, they actually on tri-annual basis, they need to be inspected and worked through. So each bay has to be moved and closed for like half a day. And we forgot that bay 2 had that requirement to be open for the attraction water. So they came up to me to coordinate this outage like this a week before the end of fiscal year. They didn't quite explain it to me that they wanted to close the work order in first place. So it wasn't the physical necessity of doing this work during the month of September, but this was the paperwork and the whole management system of the dam. That's what the management was somewhat unhappy with, that they couldn't do this work on time. So now I think we're still looking maybe at coordinating it for October. In the future, maybe Berner suggested we may put an amendment to the fish passage plan that maybe in the shoulder season, which would be September 15th through the end of the season, if we have only half a day outage, maybe we could, as long as they're not frequent, just once or once in a while, like once a month or something, if there is some need for maintenance, we would have the ability to do that. By just notifying
FMO. Midnights.
Without prior coordination, because it's a shoulder season.
Midnight?
Oh, I'll give you 10 o'clock.
Midnight, okay?
I'll say 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. Okay, 10 o'clock's fine.
For what time?
Yeah. Okay, let me understand this. You're doing this one bay at a time?
Yes.
So adjacent bays are open? Or yeah, are you available?
They were actually willing to substitute. We wanted to substitute three for two.
Yeah.
Would that be okay?
No problem.
Okay.
Well, that would.
You want three or you want one?
No, one will die because of the walls.
No, deflector, but.
No, it just dies. It'll just dies, that amount of flow will just.
How about more?
Huh?
Ooh. We had the retention, dire retention problem.
That's a good idea.
That's why one was taken out of the fish spill pattern completely, bay one.
Recirculation.
Yeah, recirculation.
It doesn't have a deflector, and so, and because of the walls, the way that works, we've seen it many, many times on the model, and that's the field, but that flow tends to just stop right there in this case.
So it's bay.
It doesn't come out. What I'm after, what I was after there was that flow to move on down.
So it's substituting with bay three, okay?
No, I think so. I think
for
that.
Up to half a day only.
So this can happen anytime?
Will this still have the same impacts on fish passage?
No, not anytime.
So when do you need it now?
I mean,
he's talking about
sooner or better, or what?
For the period he's talking about,
next week.
Right. Yeah. Can it happen? They need to do the maintenance. Can it happen next week? Can it happen tomorrow?
Time from here on forward.
Okay.
Be very specific.
This is just attraction to the
Want me to summarize that?
So
okay.
For
so
the fish passage plan. What we need to
we'll
do
have to
is
grab some language.
Date, it's okay to substitute for short periods of time. Three with.
Right.
And by the same token, now we need the same thing, outage for Battelle's equipment, hydrophones removal, for the 21st of October. We were asking maintenance if they could do their work at the same time, overlapping. I don't know if they want to do it this year or not.
So why don't we shoot for that day, the 21st, to do the spill day 2 and the PNNL outage?
Right.
And supplement with spill bay 3.
21st of
October.
And bay 2 needs to be taken for safety clearance. Entire spillway needs to be for Battelle's work because they will have boats and they will be removing their hydrophones from the spillway. Care notice.
Will they have a problem with bay 3 going?
Pardon me?
With bay 3, they'll be all right with having bay 3 going?
No, they have to close.
Everything has to
be closed. Okay. Everything shut down.
Entire, no, for Battelle's, I'm sorry, yes. We need to clarify.
So
all bays need to be closed. No substitution for Battelle.
Sounds like a December job to me.
And they prefer to do it in the morning.
About 1 a.m. That's the morning.
They like that one.
Sort of.
Eight through, I think it was requested for 6 hours.
Eight
they're hoping to be done in
8 to 4.
Yeah.
2. 8 to 2.
8 to 2.
And when?
The
21st of October.
I mean, these are two different things we're talking about. Here.
Right, but you might as well do spill bay 2 whenever you're doing that PNNL outage.
Well, I would wait to have no spill.
Yeah.
Push that off until later. Not on the 21st.
Right, and if you need to do bay 2 in dry, warm weather, then do that sooner rather than later.
So,
do
uncouple them.
Okay, so do spill bay 2 as soon as you can.
Yeah.
With Spill Bay 3 supplementing
no
that.
No problem. Right.
And then push this other one off as long as we can.
Yeah. Until it runs
out. Yeah, they come out in the morning in December. It's a nice and crisp day.
Well, at least maybe after 1st of November.
Yeah, howling east wind.
See if they can do it after November 1st.
Okay.
And then bring that back to us.
That would be better. Yeah. To have that full outage. That's the
PNL. Yeah.
Okay, we got that. There's two actions where we're decoupling.
I think you can do that.
I think we.
And then the fish passage plan change. You need to. Somebody needs to draft. You guys draft a change for that. Substitution for a limited amount of time, half a day or whatever.
Okay. Good. Okay, moving on. Agenda item 12, adult fish passage data and website display of nighttime counts. I think this agenda item was placed on, originally Clugston sent an email, I think Robert were involved in the email string, highlighting the request by, I don't know specifically who, but particular tribal reps. I don't know if Crip Fick was involved, as far as basically wanting to understand the plan of incorporating night counts into the official dam passage counts. And so there was I understood that was the request, although I don't officially know who that request came from.
Yeah, I think it's a little more complex. There's a couple issues. One is lamprey, and Clemson mentioned, we've got the, what are they called, LAPS, the lamprey passage devices that are counting lamprey, and he's thinking maybe we need to somehow include that in our counts if the tribes or somebody are looking at it more accurately, and or night counts that include lamprey since most passage occurs at night. And then in addition to that would be the nighttime passage on Granite and wherever else we're doing for sockeye.
Uh-huh.
So we're open to suggestions. Right now, John's kind of posting them as a little separate spreadsheet that you guys can look at. we've resisted kind of adding them to the current counts because they're in the 16-hour count, and that's the one thing to be relatively consistent for time. It just depends what folks want. We'll do whatever you guys decide.
I think as long as we have access to a couple of the full Monty count and Monty count, that would be acceptable. As long as we've got a staff that we have to change on that. But I don't think we're doing daily monitoring or daily management of the percent, but we do want to have access to the actual thing.
We're
going
to have to figure out a way to get the folks to us there. Are we both?
Yeah.
So then in 2000, let's say 2010, you want to look back and see lamprey passage for 2009. If you're going to do that on the website, you would only get the 16-hour day count data displayed. In order to get the full inclusion of nighttime passage numbers, you would need the annual fish passage report to get that?
Fish passage report, or we can post it as a separate attachment on that website. But it wouldn't be through whatever you query on the normal fish passage. Right. So, yeah. I mean, for lamprey, I'm open to suggestions because we know that that's the grossest index we've got out there. Daytime lamprey counts don't mean a heck of a lot.
Yeah, if you wanted to add those together, I wouldn't do it for salmon. I mean, I would keep those separate.
Not for sockeye?
That's no problem with having two counts, our normal daytime count and the nighttime count. I wouldn't just lump them together starting this year and then have that be a different count than we've had for this historic, all the way back to 1948, or whatever. So, but for lamprey, I don't think it matters. Nobody's looking at the daytime counts for lamprey.
Okay.
Well, we've been.
Are you guys using those for?
Not for management. I mean, other than trying to look at them as indexes for passage.
Right. Well, okay, and then that is a good point.
Yeah, because that's historical.
It is.
Continuity too. I don't know.
So, is there anything the matter with the way it's displayed now?
I don't think so. In fact, Robert, couldn't you guys put some kind of an asterisk or a note that's
explains these are just 16-hour counts. If you want nighttime counts for lamprey or whatever, go here or something like that.
Sure. That's not regular way web page that we query.
Yeah, I understand.
I would put it better here.
Yeah.
Just something to show it's not comparable.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But that the information exists if you want it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the FPOM recommendation then is to not include nighttime counts for lamprey or sockeye in the regular query, but will be available on a little link like is currently available, and that works for everyone, and we'll just keep what we're doing, keep doing it in the future.
Yep.
Okay.
And that link, that's just the nighttime counts? You're not lumping it with the daytime counts? Or?
Correct.
Okay.
All right.
Take my shoes off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Lamprey, probably disability bees.
Water supply butterfly valve again?
Yeah.
Damn.
Do we need to go over this one again?
We do.
Oh, good.
It's the Thai crane of the east.
Okay, so we'll just need to make sure we get the sockeye nighttime count to you, because I noticed when I was looking at the 2008 annual fish passage report, there's the sockeye nighttime counts, I don't believe, are in there. And so somehow we need to tighten it up so that we can have those data available, because I'm, you know, putting together reports, trying to send them to people, and when people are asking me, it's like, well, hey, why don't the numbers match up? Well, it's because, you know, I'm including night counts and these people aren't, and sometimes all those numbers are difficult to find. And so to me, it's really important. This plan is fine as long as we make sure that nighttime counts for both lamprey and sockeye are easily accessible in those annual fish passage reports. And if they're not, you know, whatever. If you guys can send out an email and say, hey, somebody, I don't know if it's going to be Walla Walla District or some others, need to provide this, otherwise we're going to have a hole like 2008 sockeye nighttime passage.
But what you could do is rearrange the way they're reported so you have a day count, a 16-hour count, and then an 8-hour night count right below it. I mean, you could have them. I mean, John would have to go do a whole bunch of other modifications to his program, but you could put them that way. You know, then they're available right in your face. There they are. Add them up.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that would be ideal, but
So I think this plan works. It just, I don't want to, like this year, I had a hard time tracking down some numbers from historic annual fish passage reports. And so if we can just make sure we really have that process tightened up, and we might need to talk some offline to make sure we're all communicating and getting data flowing. So, okay, thanks. All right. We've already talked about agenda item 13, so we're moving on to agenda item 14, which is the Lower Granite adult fish trap. And I know that this has been on here before, plenty of times.
This is the answer now. You got it. You know where it is? You got it?
Is it the butterfly valve actually?
Wow. You're going to tell us what the solution is.
What I am going to tell you is
what's your story?
The next step in that Sean Milligan's write-up, you know, first it was to run the ROV. We ran the ROV. Okay. Ruled that out. That's not a problem. The next recommendation is install this butterfly valve. If you recall, a year ago, Jerry Harmon said, well, I think it's a butterfly valve. And a leaky sump, if you recall.
Right.
Well, the leaky sump thing's been checked off. That's been taken care of. So it's not there's no leaky sump. There's nothing stuck in the pipe.
No obstruction.
The one thing left was replacing the butterfly valve. But one constraint, and why we couldn't do it before, was because the way the trap the way the pipes are running, to get to that butterfly valve, it's a really unsafe place for people to work. And so what has to happen is we need to get a scaffolding platform constructed so that we have a work platform so that the butterfly valve can be installed. Okay, that we have a contract out. We're getting the scaffolding constructed, and should be completed by the 30th of October. So now, once the platform's constructed, then we can replace the butterfly valve. A couple options here: we can wait until the winter maintenance period and install the butterfly valve. Problem is, everything's dry during the winter maintenance period, and we're not going to be able to tell if we did anything. And then we're going to have to wait till the next winter maintenance period to learn from that so that we can then come up with a next plan. What I'm proposing is we install the butterfly valve after October 30th so that we can actually learn while we still have water, learn if that fixed any problems. We also plan to install not just the butterfly valve, but a couple pressure sensors so that we can try to troubleshoot where some issues may be occurring. So that's we can schedule that anytime.
How long are you talking?
This is going to be a 6 hours. So it's going to be one complete day outage, though. And you can't install the butterfly valve without the ladder going out of service for the day.
Oh, I know. That's why I was wondering how long is the ladder.
Yeah. So it would be out for about a total, just to set the expectation to be, we're going to say 8 hours. We think it will be less than that, closer to 4 hours, but I don't want to commit to that. We're calling it a full day, full 8 hour day outage of the ladder. And so, again, we can wait and do it in the winter maintenance period, but we're not going to be able to learn anything until the following year, and then it's going to be too late to get anything done. So what I'd like to do is we get the platform constructed. I'd like to do it any time after the 17th of November. Because I don't like the first...
Do the butterfly.
Do the butterfly valve then. Because the early part of November, I looked at fish numbers. And there's still some Chinook. And steelhead numbers are higher. So I told the project, I'm not even going to attempt to coordinate in early November. I said, looking at the numbers, if we target anytime after the 17th of November, we have... At most, based on previous years, we have no more than 3 or 4 Chinook moving up the ladder after that, and usually it's zero. But so Chinook numbers are down. After the 17th of November, I mean, we could still have anywhere between 300 all the way to 3 steelhead.
And steelhead are the critical thing. It's Chinook.
Right. And so what I'd like to do is give the project, here's also the other risk, is we could coordinate this to happen the week of November 30. But the problem is we need to dewater the fish trap, and I get concerned about waiting that long in case we hit a really cold, a cold spell, then we could lose our window of opportunity. So I'd like to coordinate this the week before Thanksgiving.
Just remember, these aren't Thanksgiving fish that you dewater out.
Got it. Got it.
So the project is okay with dewatering and then having to do it again?
Yeah. Yeah, so we can get the butterfly valve. I had a conference call with a bunch of folks in district last week, determined that the week of November 16, November 16 is a Monday, they can do it. So I think any time after that, if we can get the green light here, then the project can do this. We can get... we can learn some information so that we can go into the winter maintenance period. I'm not going to oversell this or overpromise. I don't know that this is going to give us the golden bullet to then go in the winter maintenance period and go and fix it. But it'll give us more information so that we have an opportunity.
Do
you
water the ladder completely, or do you just shut it off?
No, you're shutting that water supply to diffuser 14. That's it.
But you're not taking the ladder down to
concrete.
No.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Okay. No, you're not going to have to salvage fish. Or
no.
You're not going to cause any problems.
So then the question is, Gary, what do you think? Do it morning or afternoon?
Bill, are you still on?
It's all day.
Okay.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, like, you could start, like, first light, and by the end of the day, you might have backup running, or you wait an hour or two, let fish get in, and then drop the flows. I don't know. You know, of course, in November, you may not even get 6 hours of light.
These are getting pretty short.
Yeah. I don't want to constrain their work windows too much. I know the people, there was concern expressed by the project of just getting that time of year, getting really cold, working in the water. They would like to have as much daylight as possible. So they will, if we can give them the green light to start at first daylight, that's what I think would be the best in coordinating this. So
As long as they really understand, Tim, that they've got to get this back together again and working again by the next morning.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I would be a real shame if something happened here and they couldn't get it back together. That really bothers me.
Which is exactly why I'm not trying to coordinate this the week of Thanksgiving. So the week before Thanksgiving, the project assured me that this, you know, they have the butterfly valve on site. They're ready to roll. It's a fairly simple operation. It's not something that's really that complicated, but
Nuts and bolts.
Nuts and bolts. But I hear your concern. That's why I think we get it started first thing in the morning. Should give us plenty of time to get it done that day.
Let's just touch base with Russ.
What percent of the ladder flow do you guys think would be diminished by cutting off, using the 14? I'm not sure what that would do.
Sounds like 75 cubic feet per second.
Part is
the entire ladder, upper ladder flow.
The diffuser portion is what?
I don't think it's
flying. Where the rear is, you go from the foot.
I'd say your key is watching the Chinook counts. As long as the Chinook counts are down close to zero, then I don't see what your problem is.
Okay. So Tom gave me the motion out the door. Start at first thing in the morning, good to go. Anytime the week of the 16th or after.
Yeah, I think it's the most time.
All right.
Something comes up.
Okay. Everyone's okay? All right.
Yeah.
Done. All right, number 15, Little Goose Dewatering Tower and Outfall Pipe Extension. Just an update, since we haven't discussed this very much in here. If you recall, what's that?
They're done.
Yeah. As you recall, last year the plan was to get three things done at Little Goose. Install the full flow pit tag detectors, replace the dewatering tower, and remove the outfall at Little Goose. And because of a number of issues, we only got one of those things done, which was the pit tag detectors. So we currently have a partial dewatering tower constructed, but it's just sitting there on the side. The plan is that the contractor will mow back up at Little Goose on November 2, and there's just a lot of details, but suffice it to say, right now it looks like we're on target to get the dewatering tower and the outfall relocation done during the winter maintenance period. So I'll keep you updated on this as it moves forward, but everything looks good now. No issues, but it is something that we plan to do this winter. Okay. 16, John was going to give you a quick update on ROV inspection of MPE3.
If you look at page 8, Goose has a coordination page. Basically, to review, we have a Little Goose at the north powerhouse entrances. There are three gates. There are MPE 1 and 2, which face downstream the daywaves, and then MPE 3, which is a lift gate. There's no weird, it's just a simple
air.
Much water flow into the spillway, perpendicular to the other gates. It developed a crack, right? Remember, it was allowing the water to leak into the tail race, and also water from the tail race into the channel when we're spilling. The project needs to replace the gate. They have a contract out to pour a new concrete bulkhead that goes in there, but they don't know if they can safely lift it. You can imagine them trying to lift it and the eye bolts pull out and have a mess. So the problem with it is timing. They want to do it for, it says here, November 30th or after, the week of November 30th. And to have a ROV inspected to see if they can, if it's damaged to the point where they can't lift it, then they have to go another route. But if the ROV says that, or inspection reveals that the gate is in good enough shape where they can attach cables to it and lift it on the slot, then they can go ahead and just simply swap the bulkhead with a new one. If it isn't, well, then they'll have to go to a plan B and have divers in and all that.
It's a contract lead time to get the divers available.
if they have to have them there on site to cut rebar or whatnot for the top of the gate.
Okay. And the other thing is, in order for the ROV, which is like a little submarine with a camera on it, they have to have the channel water really slow with no turbulence in it. So that means closing the current entrances at the south shore, excuse me, not the south shore, but the north shore entrances and the north powerhouse entrances, and that will create a dead water zone where they can safely operate the ROV. The south shore entrance will continue to operate like it always has, but it's far enough away where it isn't a problem, they feel, in terms of ROV operation. Let's see. So basically what they're asking for is to shut down all three fish pumps. Goes off the north powerhouse entrance and north shore entrances to reduce the flows. And then the downtime, they're requesting 6 hours from 9 o'clock to a.m. to 3 p.m. during the week of November 30th or after. And if it's determined to be safety to lift, then they'll go ahead and lift and replace it with a new gate.
And there is an error on this form. It says this is peak period for fall Chinook passage. It's not peak period. It's after the peak. There should be probably zero fall Chinook passing Little Goose on November 30th. So just a minor correction. But
is the North Shore bulkhead that was bad, is that going to be replaced with the same operation?
Yeah, they'll get rid of the floating crane. They say they will.
Okay, good to go?
Yes.
So we're saying yes on this one.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Bill. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Moving on to agenda item 17, fish passage plan change forms, 17.1, Bonneville split flows.
How about, unless you guys are ready to make a decision on those, how about you read them and we can discuss them next month with a yes or no, since you probably haven't had a chance to review them fully, in the interest of time, since there are two others.
Okay. I actually think the McNary one below that is ready to go because we've discussed it so many different times. This is about installation of ESBSs.
I do have a concern.
I'll first read you the fish passage plan change form. It's simply adding one sentence which says, installation of ESBSs will not start before the first Monday of April and will be completed within the following 2 weeks. That way we're not having to redo this every year.
But okay. No later than some date.
This doesn't work, this language? Because sometime the first Monday of April can be no later than
the
second.
Look at the calendars. I got to see when the first Monday occurs, and if that 2 weeks, then that 2 weeks is like after the 20th.
If I can promise you that the first Monday will never be later than the 7th.
Will you write that down?
Come on, drive this car.
Well, the first Monday can never be later than the 7th.
I promise you it'll
run. And then 2 weeks after that.
And then 2 weeks after that. This year, the first Monday was the 6th, which is the second latest Monday, first Monday in April that you can have. So then that means for this year, from your concerns perspective, was near worst case scenario as far as latest installation of ESBSs. So that's why I'm wording it this way rather than saying, like, we'll start on April 2 and end April sometime. This just...
I don't have a problem with the way it's worded as long as we have an end date in there.
Yeah, it's will be completed within the following 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, 30th is a little late.
So basically, the latest you could have is 14 days plus 7 to 21. So it'd be the latest date here would be 21st.
Right.
And the latest possible date. Is that suitable for you?
Well, you know, the other part about this was that we were going to look at what the runs looked like this year.
Yeah.
Salmon runs to see how well that worked. I haven't done that. I haven't looked to see how many fish were passing McNary.
I have.
And then we did this.
Okay. Great. Okay. So the ESBS's installation of them started this year. It could have started as early as the 6th and had to be completed within the following 2 weeks. Or really what this means is the first Monday and then completed by not the next Thursday, but the following Thursday. So this year, that meant April 6th was the first Monday, and two Thursdays after that was the 16th. That was the window we gave them. It was a 10-day window. Okay. They didn't start on the 6th like they could have. They started on the 7th. And they had the last ESBS installed by the 14th. So the 7th through the 14th. That 7-day window is when the first ESBS was installed all the way to the last one. Okay? Tracking me so far? Then, so April 9th, total number of fish, of juvenile fish collected, 411. April 11, collected 1,115. April 13, which is now most of them are installed, 1,526.
Tim, is this, are you, these are collection or index? This is an index.
These are daily number of fish collected.
Okay.
The total collection.
Yeah, we were in that every other day collection mode and primary, secondary bypass during that period.
I'm so, just wondering what the index was. I mean, we usually run by index, not by collection. Inside here, but that's fine. Whatever.
So then by the 15th, once they were all installed, we had 4,390. Okay, then it starts going up from there. The 17th, we had 5,000. The 19th, we had 7,000. The 21st, we had 9,000. 23rd, then we jumped up to 21,000. And it goes continues every other day. So 21,000, 35,000, 62,000. And then I'll fast forward to like May 7th. And we hit one of the major peaks, 162,000.
So, I'm going to cut to the chase. No, I'm not ready to say okay on this.
Okay.
Let me look at this data. Okay. And then I want to look at it. So.
In case that helps you.
Thanks.
There's a gate in front of you.
That always helps. But I'll probably go through the fish passage. Not that I don't trust your numbers, but I would like to look at the index counts too.
So my question is, Dave, I had to bring it up. Are you guys changing your index count based on number of screens? Because you should. So as screens increase, your fish guide fish is going to change. So you're going to change your index. So we may not be able to use the index. Because index, I bet it doesn't vary.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about that. So I just want to sit down and think about this.
That's why, to me, on the 15th, when all ESBSs were installed, we only had
3,
like 4,000 fish on the 15th. 3,000?
Total.
Total that passed.
Yeah.
And so our big concern was...
Well,
that's
not that passed.
That were collected.
Collected, yeah.
That's the 22.
Which represents all the fish that entered the bypass system. Okay, so to me, I thought what we were trying to do was make sure we had these screens installed to capture the major peak of the run. And I look at that and I see early May, we're getting 150,000, 180,000.
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't the point. My point was that there shouldn't be harm to salmon from this. I'm sorry, but that's my position.
Okay.
And, you know, it wasn't the peak. It was... the run. When the run started, then we're starting to incur some damage there.
Well, I was wrong. This was not an easy one.
Never
we'll have it back on the agenda next month.
Hey, we're fine with it, so.
Yeah.
Are you?
Okay.
Tentatively.
That's okay.
And
that's,
I think the next one, 17.3.
I understand.
Yeah, and that was delayed because of the lamprey.
Oh, yes.
MBSBS installation was delayed because of lamprey.
Yeah, do you see NOAA? Do you see a lamprey anywhere in the NOAA?
Do you see me concerned about lamprey?
It should be concerned about all fish, no matter whether they're edible or not.
That's right.
Maybe personally than I am.
It's 12:06. We're still doing okay in time, but... 17.3 agenda item. You'll see a LOMO change form 4.3.1. And basically the only thing that's being inserted here is giving a new time of noon. And John, do you want to explain why the new time is being put in here? Okay. For
this is what happened when work's done on a turbine unit and it's completed at the end of the week. You know, as you know, the projects work from Monday to Thursday. And so you may have the head gate not completely out of there. It would be in the storage position in the, well, it's not completely raised, but it could be run. And it'd only be from July to December when flows are low, and you have to have, I think it was 4 units available before this condition could be evoked. What happens is over the weekend, you know, the operator will operate that unit on a minimal basis, and it would be left in line for that. And then on Monday, the powerhouse crew usually has a meeting to review safety issues before doing any work, especially crane work on a head gate, and have work assignments and all that. The current plan says the gates have to be back up to in the raised positions by 7 o'clock. Well, they report to work at 6:30, and it isn't going to happen. So this is a minor change to make it noon so that it gets done that morning. So we're talking about a few hours rather than a couple days or anything like that. So it's just to match the requirements with reality.
Everyone okay with this?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Bill. Dominic. Okay, good. We will take that. We will add that to the change forms approved. We'll bring the McNary ESBS change form over to next month.
When do we become the Senate Finance Committee?
Thank you, Tom.
We started these change forms.
Okay, potential change forms still to be installed.
2 years ago?
I guess two are still being drafted by by Walla Walla. Tom, you can work with Greg and wrap that one up. We really need to get that on the agenda in November. So that one to nail. The other one for Walla Walla, Doug, we, the plan is to take those footnotes out of the Little Goose spill table and bring them into the text of the document, and we'll have that change form written up for the November FPALM. All the other FPALM or all the other FPP change forms from Walla Walla, I believe, are done except for those two, and we'll get those on the agenda for November. So, anything else as far as the Bonneville change forms?
18-2, why is that on there?
18-2.
Unit priority?
With the
really?
Removal of the ITS
because
wall.
At the last meeting, you said that we needed to relook at the unit priority for Powerhouse 1, as well as include the unit priority when we have a high head situation. That's why that's on.
High head situation.
It may not, the unit priority may not change this year, but we discussed it as something that needs to be looked at and put in the FPP, so it's there.
Yeah, 18-1, I understand. Okay.
Do you want me to pull up last month's meeting?
She's talking.
Do we have time? Yeah, I do. I put it on the overhead.
Okay, well, it sounds like one that's going to be written up, and then it can be further discussed next month.
Well, I think it probably requires an ERDC trip unless you can just make those decisions without looking at a model, which maybe you can. I don't really care. I just know that it was brought up as something that needs to be looked at.
I'll read it because it's not making sense to me. Just taking the ITS wall out doesn't. There's no reason why you would change the unit priority. So that itself, I don't remember anything.
Because it was the discussion of what would be appropriate unit priority at Powerhouse 1, especially since we have changed how juveniles are getting through there, I guess.
Well, yeah.
That's fine. I'll pull it up, and we can listen to the
discussion.
There may
be more to it. I'd have to see. Something triggered the response, but right now I'm not getting it because. Okay. So, just taking the wall out doesn't change anything in how we put this finish.
Okay. We still have a couple items under other, but before we get to that, I want to talk about the next two FPALM meetings. November FPALM is scheduled to be the 12th. The only issue on that one is the day before that is the 11th, which is a holiday. And so I would like to start FPOM at 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock on the 12th, simply because I'm going to be driving up. Folks from Walla Walla are driving up that morning. So start that at 10.
Doing a conference call from the car?
I'd rather not. The next one, then December FPOM. And so just an aside here, I'm going to work really hard to not change FPOM meetings. I want to keep them on the second Thursday of every month. This one was different because a lot of people were going to be gone at this unique Lamprey meeting that we have scheduled on Thursday. And as I say that now, the December FPOM is, there's a large meeting with smolt monitoring crews that's being pulled together by PSMFC, and they're looking to do that the Wednesday and Thursday of December. So that would be, well, without those dates in front of me, whatever the
9th and 10th.
9th and 10th. And so Bern and I talked, and we both are should probably be at that meeting since it's a large discussion talking about the whole program. So with enough notice, can we reschedule December FPOM to be just like we did today, which would be the second Tuesday, which is December 8th.
I would simply say yes, but I'll talk to the rest of that packet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about making Monday?
Well, then the guys from Walla Walla have a tough drive.
Yeah, everybody's got staff.
And that's right, we're going to drive up from Walla Walla.
Whoa.
In December. You can represent the rest of us.
I'll call in.
So can we plan now? You want to check with FPAC and let us know if there's a problem?
I'm pretty sure if you did, you see anything why we wouldn't be able to move it. I think we should be fine. So we can probably move FPAC to Monday afternoon. And
okay. Okay. Sounds good.
Or Tuesday afternoon after.
If it's short, yeah.
We'll be in the throes of a FPP work.
That's going to be a strange day.
Yeah.
Okay. That really will
That'll be a long day, I think.
It's going to be a long day.
It always is.
We're going to have a couple of dedicated FPP meetings, though. We're not combining them again FPP like last year.
December, too.
Okay.
Well, so we good luck finding days.
Can you let us know if you see a problem with that? Otherwise, okay. Sounds good. But anyway, mark your calendars for November 12, 10 a.m., we have the room here, and then December 8th here. Gary or Ed, can someone check on the room availability on December 8th, 9 a.m.?
And I have to change the conference call. While we're discussing meetings, can we talk a little bit about the FPP meetings that and the schedule? Doug, are you ready to talk about that?
Sure.
I know Doug had given Walla Walla the deadline of 1 November for change forms. For the core, and then those will be incorporated into a draft. No, they won't be. The draft, when will the draft FPP be available for everyone to comment on?
My understanding is we were going to get all the forms ready for that shoot for the November. Is that correct? Shoot for the 1st of November, get everything posted so everybody can review and start slinging mud, and we're going to shoot for November 1. We're going to get them posted. And also, if you guys have any logistical comments on the website posting, please feel free to let Tammy or I know. We've been working. We're trying to basically roll over last year's. And so if there's any recommendations you have that we can do quickly and easily, we're doing it in-house, please feel free to let us know. We can listen to your comments and we'll make some changes. But November 1, and then after that, I would turn to you, Tammy, as far as coordination goes for last year. Tell me how that goes then from November on. So I'm assuming you post them as draft, correct, in November. We're going to shoot for November 1st. And then we're going to look to everybody to really jump on it right then and start getting the issues out on the table so we can resolve it.
Meeting in December.
Well, now normally we have a meeting in January where we hash through all the change forms up on the screen and we go through each and every one. So we need agency comments back sometime in December.
Back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Usually there's, the Corps got comments or change forms. There may be other agency folks that have comments. change forms or something that needs to go into the plan, when does that leave?
So the idea is that these change forms that we've been discussing and approving that are on the agenda, those will be finalized and in the draft in track changes so you can see whatever's there. And that draft is what you guys will take and make your comments on. And that's when, at some point, there'll be a deadline for you guys getting your comments back in. We'll incorporate all of your comments and proposed changes into a new draft, which is what we will discuss at our January FPP meeting.
So you're looking for our, if we have changes that we want to see in their change form or whatever.
Before Christmas would be good, for me at least, because I can take that. And
okay, so when does the special operations and the research stuff with all
I don't care
that
about that, so we're talk to
yeah,
RCC.
Just the first part.
I do not care about Appendix A, and I don't want to see any change forms for Appendix A either.
Oh, wait. Am I dealing with Appendix A then?
I'm just saying that I am not dealing with it. No, normally it's the planning department that deals with that, not FPOM. So I don't know. You will probably have to. I will help for Portland District prod them along, but I don't want to see any. We don't do change forms for Appendix A.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't want the plan be dragged out into April because all the ducks are not in a row.
Yeah, you'd end up with the wrong spill patterns and all kinds of things.
Well, right, so
still haven't gotten fixed. So
in January, maybe either before or after the January FPOM, we will have the dedicated FPP meeting. I do not want to combine FPOM and FPP like we did last year because that day went really long and we didn't get through everything.
So
it'll probably be a Friday because that seems to be what people have available.
If we get the Dalles wall in, that's going to be a big change in operations there. That's probably one of the biggest ones. But there's also, if we move the two TSWs at John Day south, that'll be a big change. And there's going to be a lot of stuff in there that's going to change.
So the FPP day will be in January, where we have one dedicated. So we'll try to do it
and
back
and that's where
back
we do it.
That'll
on the screen
meeting,
and go
right
through all the changes.
Is that
yes.
Date or is that, it's
can we
that
I would
set that date?
Say the second Thursday of January is FPOM. So can we? You want to make the Friday, or do you want to push it to the Wednesday, the day before? I would prefer to do it on one side or the other of FPOM, just because I don't like this drive.
Can you suggest the Tuesday, just so you can drive up on Tuesday?
Thank you.
This is going to be where?
We'll probably have it here in Portland. That's normally where we have it, but we could move it
to the Dalles.
To the Dalles. We've done it at the Dalles before. That's
done it there.
That's fine.
Is the Westrick room available now?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's functional.
Okay.
All fixed up.
Honestly, if we're going to have FPOM the day before or the day after, you don't need to move it to the Dalles for us. If we're going to be here for FPOM anyway,
we have FPOM at the Dalles.
I mean, if we can,
you hate the drive. We're going to try to make. We heard you, so we're trying to work with you here.
So I mean, I'm.
That means people would end up staying overnight probably. A bunch of people from here in the Dalles would everyone drive home.
I sure hate to drive home and come back the next day.
Yeah. So
all right, so FPOM here and then FPP at the Dalles.
I'm fine FPP here as well. We might as well have the FPOM and FPP meeting at the same place.
All right.
So
have you asked Kathy to reserve the room for all next year?
No, I haven't done that.
I did, and she said she wouldn't let me do it until next year. So I said, well, couldn't you make a note?
Well, this is next year.
And she said no.
Not fiscal year.
Calendar.
Okay,
year.
Okay. So we're going to try for the day after the January.
I saw some funny looks on that. Are we okay the day after FPOM in January, so a Friday?
I can't swear to it because I left my calendar at home, but tentatively.
I mean, January, so
we got to schedule it sometime. And if we do it
the Thursday,
do it now.
So that would be the 15th of January is the Friday that we'll have the FPP meeting.
So January, what was it, 14 is the FPOM?
Yeah.
January 14th is Thursday. Friday is the 15th. Oh, you know what, though? Wait. Somebody is, because the 18th is MLK, so everybody's going to say, oh, I'm heading out of town on Friday.
Oh, shit.
Let's do it Wednesday, then.
Let's do it Wednesday. Wednesday. Can we do it 13th? January?
If there's no TNT meeting.
For now, let's tentatively schedule the 13th. But let's try to nail down the 13th as far as whatever other schedule conflicts. I don't want to wait until January to resolve that.
Okay.
So, if Dave, if you can maybe champion the 13th and look that date, make sure to work on for TNT schedule, and Tom will check out December 8th. That way we can nail those down. Like, it'd be nice if we can nail them down like even this week.
It'll probably be next week. We'll probably talk about this back next Tuesday.
Okay. Sounds good.
All day.
Okay. Let me recap. November 12th, F-Palm. November 8th, or excuse, December 8th, F-Palm. January 13th, all-day FPP meeting in Portland.
Real quick on that. Dave, do you think that the 13th Wednesday would be a TNT? Okay, never mind. Sorry.
It's too late. They're not scheduled.
Okay.
We got it.
Okay.
January 13th, FPP meeting here. January
9 to 4,
sure.
Thank you.
January 14th, F-Palm here.
Sure you don't want to start at 8?
We can start at 8 on
Well, I'm just asking.
The day before.
Is everybody coming up that morning or the day before?
Yeah, we're coming up
Tuesday. You'll probably be
coming up.
You can determine that later.
So, Burn doesn't really start till 8 o'clock, so 9 o'clock.
Let's leave
give
it.
Him
let's
time
be consistent. We'll leave it at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
What are your? What are those? Those are Tuesday and a Wednesday. Is that what that is?
The 13th is a Wednesday. January 13th is a Wednesday. January 14th is the regularly scheduled F-ball.
Okay.
Okay. We're doing some housekeeping. We're good on future dates.
There's more in the tote.
Okay. We had three items that was added to the agenda to start. Bonneville Unit 11, we did not get an update on that yet.
Nope.
Okay, so the next one I have written down, John Day, South Fish Turbine Unit 2.
I Cordy? Wouldn't count yeah. before fish passage season.
I just wanted to give a real quick update on where we're at with the South Fish Turbine rehab at John Day. As you might remember, the project was working on one of the three, and they've been working on it for over a year. That is going to be contracted now for the remaining two and to finish up that one. It's under stimulus funds, and they have a really tight schedule to get this done. They want to get it done by the end of FY12. And they need a year for the plans and specs on it. So that gives them 2 years to finish 2.5 units. And so at some point, and I know this is way in advance, but at some point they're going to be requesting that the fish unit be out during fish passage season for them to do a dive and actually swap the tail logs to the next unit. And actually, it may even be two dives per summer on passage season 2011 and 2012, where they'll need a dive to remove the tail log from the one they just fixed, run it for a while, so we'll be running on three for a while, make sure everything's good, and then they'll come back in maybe a couple weeks later, do another dive to put the next one in. And they're talking about night dives, 10 to 12 hour night dive. They wanted to get a feel right now just how receptive F-Palm would be to accepting that so they could start planning now.
So these are
planning
nighttime
the
outages,
schedule now.
Nighttime outages. Sometime in the summer?
Sometime in the summer.
June maybe?
We'll try to piggyback it with that first week of August when we usually do the fish migrating if we can.
Yeah.
But if we can't, we'll
I think
run around it.
This is June 2012?
Yeah, during the
It'll be sometime during the fish passage season. They don't have a month figured out yet.
Okay, but you just said before they would all be finished by
the end of FY12.
FY12
is their target. Yeah.
Peak of sockeye would be a bad time.
Peak of anything. Okay, so we'll stay away from...
Peak of sockeye. Stay away from
sockeye primarily?
Yeah. Because if you're doing it at night, it would be a nighttime outage. Sometime, and so we want to be careful during the mid-June time frame, probably. Stay away from that if possible. I don't think it's a big deal, but it sounds like a fairly short.
Well, they could factor that in now. So, you know, if they avoid, like, the whole month of June.
If they could do that, I mean, it'd be great until July. You know,
okay.
That's a lull time for most passage.
All right. So we'll let them know that, and then they'll start scheduling out.
It's one of those things that you can probably do whatever, but
okay.
That'd be preferred.
Everyone agrees? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last issue that I had written down was the Dalles fish units.
Right, and that was an ongoing discussion we've had for several years about how do we handle heavy units out there or what we can do to stretch out the lights of them. And Bob and Jason and Eric went up and had a field day. And it sounds like there's some results that we may be able to put into a change form and modify the FPP to accommodate some running. You don't like to carry a running point unit, but still stay within criteria, and potentially figure out what months you want to do that, how to stretch out your life. You can expect to do that. But well, the mirror in your field trip.
Yeah, I mean, Bob showed us the. I guess it's the. What do you call the entrance out there on the south side of the spillway? Just the south side spillway.
South, yeah, south spillway entrance. Yep.
To 8 foot or 16 foot wide opens. Close down one of those. You maintain ladder criteria with one fish pump. You don't reduce your flow. Your compression flow is not. It's not reduced. It's just compressed.
No, you have to reduce your flow.
Well, it goes from 30 feet down to 16 feet, but you drop the. Tail logs, or should you make it deeper?
Yeah, we can make it a little deeper.
But it's still the same flow. Okay.
The south entrance loses a lot of water. And so normal operation, when we're down to one unit, we close one of the south entrances right. And leave the other
Where's
one
Where's the
open.
Water loss at?
The water loss is just because they're so wide. There's two of them so wide, you know. And then at the west and the east, they're only half the width, and we're only running two of the three. And so we just push a lot of water to the south, and we don't get as good a benefit as we do as like the east entrance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we're down to one fish unit operation, we just increase the one fish unit as high as we can go. And then we end up closing one of the south, and then everything else we can hold in criteria.
Yeah, this is a little bit of finger work because there's a group out there that's looking at this, you know, and that needs to be pulled into that. Right?
So it's just something.
I don't want to do something. I don't want this to be separate from that.
Yeah,
but yeah. It's an alternative that you know concerns me that we may have to be running one unit, you know, full bore to accommodate that. That could quicken the.
Yeah, probably the best way to do it, though. You want to run those as hard and for as long as you can, rather than constantly moving up and down, chasing things with them. So if you leave it running.
I'm not sure hard as good as a candle is a good thing either. So that's, I'd want the district to have the other guys that are working on this to have a look at it too. But yeah, it's a good thing to throw in there as a mix. I mean, that's.
Yeah,
we can't get North Wasco to at least put their.
It is not really running hard. It is running unit to its full capacity. With two units, we don't run them.
Well, let's look at the criteria, you know, meeting the criteria. We need to meet the criteria. That's bottom line.
Yeah.
So if they can meet the criteria and the unit doesn't, and we're not shortening the life of the unit doing that with one, then, yeah, that's a good alternative.
So we wanted to write up something in the change form and then have it reviewed.
But probably, that probably won't work under all tailwaters. The sort of thing to look at is whether you can meet them all the time or if it's just certain times of the year.
Right, if you didn't want the ball to drop, you wanted to throw it out and on the table to see if you can get it to this next fish passing plan. So.
Well, isn't that a little premature for a change form? And we don't know that.
Well, how do we want to discuss it?
Well, here's how I would. I mean, there's a Portland District has a team that's looking at alternatives. That team needs to have this as alternative X, Y, Z, whatever.
in their process. It shouldn't be this group's doing this thing over here, another big group's doing this thing over there. That there needs to be one group doing this. So it isn't an O&M thing. I see it as probably more fitter wig, and the guys, whoever's doing that work under Portland District, has to incorporate this as another alternative.
Yeah,
that's the way I would do it. Because otherwise, you're just spinning in a loop.
They do have a lot of that information, and one of the big things that they want to determine is how much water, for a backup system, how much water do we need, and how low can we go with that?
Right.
For the amount of backup water.
But it's...
And so, yeah, so they have that information from that perspective.
But they need to have, then they need to develop an alternative based on that. I haven't heard that. You know, they've got other things out there, and I tried to get this idea of having George Wasco put a unit on there, and we don't want to hear about that either. So, is it George? I think it is. No.
George Medina.
Yeah, maybe it isn't.
George Medina.
Is it George?
Yeah. Okay. I forget who else was on
it.
I know George.
So, do we want to sort of circle this up? Do we want to have George request that he participate on our next FPOM?
Well, what I would do is I'd say FPOM has a recommendation for that committee to look at. See if it would work. Formally say, yeah, FPOM has a recommendation for the team that's looking at the Dalles fish unit.
I think it can just be a when we send out the meeting minutes, once you review the minutes, and it's likely going to be the minutes we'll have to edit in some way to make sure it meets the recommendation.
Jim
here
is captured perfectly,
so just look at the minutes when they get sent out, and then we can forward that on to George and say, please see item X for the FPOM recommendation to be considered.
There are two components. I mean, the long-term fix might be a modification, physical modification, but in the short run, we have an option that we can implement. So at some point, we may want to tease that back out.
So the thought is then to improve life expectancy by just running on one and giving the other.
Okay. What I would want to do, though, I mean, unless you guys want to do it, you need engineers working on this. They need to look at how much in criteria time we're talking about, how much out of criteria time we're talking about, given the veil water fluctuation, the Dalles, and the water years that we're expecting.
That's the Helmholtz model.
Yeah. So that kind of thing that analysis needs to be done, because you need to meet the criteria. I'm not going to back away from that just to make sure it's.
It's kind of the same process we did at B2 for auxiliary water supply. Ran the engineering analysis of what it could do with one unit, and what was the best closures, and what was the biggest bang for the buck. We closed the gate, or we do something to get through with one unit. What was our? We know now that at certain tailwater levels, we can do certain stuff.
Yeah. So then it would be a criteria. It'd be something that we would implement within that. Those restrictions, whatever they
have to be. And a little more information on that. We did an analysis just roughly figuring out how much water has gone south, west, and east, and then did the fish passage ratio in comparison. And the west, so your water or your fish per amount of water for the west and the south are very similar. Now, granted, the south puts out about twice as much water. But the fish per amount of water is very similar, and the east is excellent.
Oh yeah,
and you get a lot of fish.
That's where most of
per
fish
water.
Are.
Yeah. So.
But the west, you're talking about the west powerhouse.
Yeah, west powerhouse.
Versus the spillway, south spillway.
So if you close one of the south entrances, you may actually improve efficiency on that, because you might get the same amount of fish using the south. For half the amount of water, or not exactly half, 60% of the amount of water.
Right.
So
especially with the wall. Now the wall's going to be, could change all that.
Yeah. Bob, can you take the minutes when they come out? Take them. Take this section. Work it from your end and plug in the details, and then ship it around so folks that want to have input into it can have input. Scott, Gary, whoever else wants to have input, Jason, Eric, input into it so that we can really firm this up, and then we can send it on to George and make the request that he consider the FPALM recommendation.
If we were going to make any changes, the next year may be a good opportunity because there is going to be a renewed effort for the adult fish tracking, so we may be able to see how the breakdown between the ladders happen.
Yeah.
Because the first of all, will be doing lots of post-construction evaluations. There will be large number of fish in the river.
Your tail race is going to change dramatically once the wall's done.
Yeah, with the wall and
with all eight.
But days. Still doing that in a block stay design with that gate.
Yeah. Open and close.
Open and close, and just if you've got enough fish out there, you know, nothing. Efficiency kind of is a misnomer. How many fish approach, use, and delay at that entrance?
That's really the key. You know, delay is the issue. We don't want to have a bigger delay, even though they're all using one. You can have all your fish using one entrance, and it'd be very efficient.
Maybe enough fish in numbers to detect if they respond to that flow changes. One gate versus two.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to try. I suspect we won't see much of a difference. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. Then.
Okay.
My guess, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well,
we'll have it.
When we get this cleaned up, then we'll send this request to George as an alternative we want considered in the process they have moving forward. We are done. We were told we had this room until 12:40. It is 12:39.
So you have 2 seconds. Excellent. I want to know what is going on with gas measurements at Cascade Island at Bonneville. That's what I was afraid of.
What?
Just at the exit of the ladder, how we get these ridiculously high levels of gas measurements down, and how we related them to tailwater relationships, and what, if anything, are we proposing to do about said activity?
Okay. I'm guessing, as I look around the room, that we don't have an answer for you right now. This will be...
We'll check with his total dissolved gas team.
I believe there's. I think someone at RCC was.
Asked you guys at the burn that I talked to you in the hall.
It'll be an action item. Got it. Thanks, Tom. See you all 10 a.m. November 12th back here.
10 a.m. November 12th. Okay. I'll be Elkhart.
Are you?
I might be here.
You can call him.
Yeah, from a different somewhere.
Oh, wait.